Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, I'm a little man. It's quite a soul. I'm everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I help send against you.
Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. This is on the radio this January 26, 2012. Just after 7 o'clock, 7:01 on Eastern Standard Time, that is. And plenty of news today. There's breaking news roughly at about 8 o'clock, well, probably even earlier than that, 7 o'clock this morning, in fact. Here in the local New York area, a former national news reporter by the name of Greg Kelly, who is incidentally the... son of Commissioner Ray Kelly here in New York City, who is nationally known, was, according to reports, charged with rape. But there are a million different things that are very, very odd about this story. The number is 347-308-8701. And you can log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com right now. And you can check out the link to the story that has been in the New York Post. I've been going over the story all day. It was probably about 3-4 hours ago that there were some updates to the story. But for those of you who haven't heard it, the breakdown is this. According to the report, Mr. Greg Kelly, who is the host of a local TV show here called Good Day New York with Roseanne Scotto, and has been in 2008, was accused of rape late Tuesday evening. According to reports, the rape is supposed to have occurred in October of 2011. That's right, folks. The rape is supposed to have taken place in October of 2011 and was reported late Tuesday night. Also, according to reports, the boyfriend, who had been making a lot of noise about his girlfriend being raped by Greg Kelly, the TV host, even confronted the commissioner of New York, Raymond Kelly, at a public event, telling Raymond Kelly, quote, "Your son ruined my girlfriend's life." To avoid a scene, Commissioner Kelly told the gentleman to put whatever the complaint was in writing. There has been no confirmation or denial for that part, whether or not a letter was ever sent. Then, of course, the allegation comes out on late Tuesday night at the 13th Precinct Detective Squad. Here is the breakdown of the story as the victim alleges. In some date in October, she was out on the street or at a party where she ran into Greg Kelly. The two had some drinks together, went back to her law firm in Lower Manhattan. They were at the South Street Seaport, by the way. If those are familiar, that's the lower end of the city on the east side. Anyway, then after their drinks, went up to the alleged victim's law office, law firm. This woman is not an attorney, according to reports, but went to her law firm where she claims Greg Kelly sexually assaulted her, ultimately raped her. Now, that was the story that came out at 8 o'clock this morning. Many people were trying to figure out, because original reports had said that the two had met on the street. Then reports had changed and said they were at a bar. But that's the press. So it's not as if the alleged victim in this case, the accuser, and let's use that word, the accuser. Let's not say that the accuser changed their story. The news report changed their story. The story originally was that the two met on the street. It was then changed that the two met inside of a bar or they were at a club drinking together. The story has always been maintained that they went to the girl's office building where she works at a law firm, and that's where she alleges the rape took place. Some 4 hours ago, I was sitting with my sister, and my sister, who's a huge fan of Greg Kelly and the show, was completely baffled because she likes him. You know, she thinks he's attractive. A lot of women do find him attractive, find him very, very charismatic. He's a well-liked New York TV anchor. And I think he's a fair guy. My opinion of him is, I mean, I kind of like the guy. I think he's, you know, he's pleasant. He's funny. He's engaging. Sometimes he's a little corny. He's often made fun of on that TV show, The Soup, with Joe McHale. So he's got some national appeal. So my sister is telling me this story, and she immediately is very, very, you know, she immediately looked at this with some skepticism. And as many people do in the comments pages in the New York Post and other places, Good Morning America, Yahoo News, people are all saying the same thing. They're just skeptics. What do you mean she met him at a bar and went up to the, you know, went up to the office building? They're out drinking. They met on the street. She waited, what is it, October, November, December, 3 months, some 3 months to make this report. So, yes, cynicism aside, there has to be some skepticism. But then the story goes on. Mr. Greg Kelly has turned over his telephone. Based on that information, it turns out that Greg Kelly and the accuser had been exchanging phone calls and text messages a month after they met. So some 4 weeks went on where they were continuing to communicate with each other after this alleged rape took place. And as I was going into, 4 hours ago, then a bombshell hit the news. It is now being reported that the accuser in this case became pregnant and aborted the child. There were also claims that she called her friend from her law office where she was severely intoxicated, according to the reports, and according to one of the friends who spoke to ABC News, that she had to call her friend, and her friend grabbed her, picked her up, and took her home, and said that she was very distraught. This is the day of the alleged incident. Yet the police were not called. Phone conversations went on for a month via cell phone and text messaging. An irate boyfriend confronting Mr. Kelly's father at a public event, and then an ultimate accusation in 2012. What do you think we're going to find out next, ladies and gentlemen? Now, Mr. Kelly has not been arrested. There has been no arrest. There has been no perp walk. The New York City Police Department is not investigating the case because, of course, Mr. Greg Kelly's father is the commissioner of the New York City Police Department in charge of some 40,000 officers. Therefore, a conflict of interest. So this has been transferred to the New York City District Attorney's Office. Their investigators are investigating the claim. Why has there been no arrest? Very simple. Three words. Dominique Strauss-Kahn. The International Monetary Fund, former International Monetary Fund head, who was accused of rape some summers ago, and found that the credibility of the witness was sketchy at best. But after dragging the International Monetary Fund head off of an plane in handcuffs, Pert walked and then completely, you know, embarrassed the New York City District Attorney's Office and having to release him on his own recognizance and then drop the charges entirely. Is the reason why the District Attorney's Office has not made an arrest, and because of all of the mitigating factors that I just explained to you, have not done anything but investigate. There has been no comments. No one has stepped forward. No one's talked. Greg Kelly was not on the air on Good Day New York this morning. His colleagues support him, or at least one who is open publicly, Rosanna Scotto, who co-hosts Good Day New York with him, says, "I love Greg, and that's all I can say." The number's 347-308-8701. Let's bring in the crew. Mary, Ed, JT. You didn't know about the bombshell, or did you?
Not at all.
Well, wait a minute. Reese and I were talking about this earlier because he told me about it, and I did read up on the story. So what did I text you earlier? I was like, did she get preggers, or what happened? So it does not shock me that that was a situation. She probably got pregnant, didn't know who the baby's daddy was, had an abortion. Her boyfriend probably found out and wanted to know why, and now that's why all of this has blown up to what it has been. There's no way that this man raped her, got her pregnant, and then she continued to talk to him for an entire month back and forth. I'm a woman. If someone rapes me, I'm not going to continue to speak to them for an entire month, whether I've brought them up on charges or thinking about bringing them up on charges or not. I'm not going to be cordial to you or have any type of communication with you. If you rape me, now I am completely afraid of you. She was probably in her office crying, and her girlfriend probably came by to pick her up because she just had unprotected sex with this man, and it was possible that she could become pregnant, and what was she going to tell her boyfriend? If she got pregnant, it's your baby. Was her boyfriend Caucasian?
I don't know. It's funny, you know. It's very interesting that, you know, the way I look at it is very similar to the way you do, but that mitigating factor to me is the pregnancy. You know, the embarrassment or the shame that she felt being pregnant with another man's child, and I'm only speculating. Which is essentially my job to do, but I don't like to do it much. But I would like to throw a scenario out there. You know, she has a boyfriend. Let's say the boyfriend can't conceive. She ends up pregnant. He immediately finds this out. What do you mean you're pregnant? You know, I had a vasectomy, or I can't produce. I'm sterile, whatever the case may be.
Or maybe he's African American, maybe he's Latino, maybe he's Indian. If she would have went on to say, okay, this is your baby, I'm pregnant, it would have been a problem if that baby did not come out looking just like she and him did.
Gotcha. Yeah, I see. The fact that the boyfriend is making all of this noise really, really sort of, you know, my right eye jumps in the air when I hear this. The excuse that was given, the reason why she didn't come forward, was because she was concerned about Raymond Kelly's status, you know, the father's status as commissioner, Greg Kelly being his son. Great. He very, very skeptical. You know, it's not so much that she didn't want the baby or had an abortion. If you're raped and Raymond Kelly is responsible for the child, you don't get rid of the evidence. You see what I'm saying?
Well, now, I mean, I don't know about that because I don't know if, you know, how you can't. You also have to think about, okay, so you don't get rid of the evidence. You have this baby, and then here's this baby that was created from something allegedly so heinous. You know,
well,
that's
no,
what
no, no.
to do with the baby.
But no, Mary, you know, when's the latest you can have an abortion?
I don't even know how many weeks You know, no, you have to be to have
you
an abortion.
Can't have an abortion. You can't have an abortion beyond the third trimester. She's barely made the first. Come on. What do you mean she got an abortion? The
well, maybe she didn't know, but maybe the thing was is that she didn't know who the father was. Maybe it wasn't any evidence. It might not even have been his kid. I'm sure that she was sleeping if it wasn't a rape, and she was sleeping with him having unprotected sex with this gentleman that she just met in a bar or on the street or whatever. Then I'm sure that she was having unprotected sex with her boyfriend.
Well,
or there could be others.
Right,
then
or there
you,
could
it
be
could,
others.
It could be a Maury Povich show in the beginning, in the working.
I think a correction on that too. I think that you can't have an abortion after your first trimester.
Oh,
that's
I'm almost certain. Late term abortions are anything beyond the third trimester. I'm almost certain of that. I'll double check it. But I'm
I
almost
think your
certain.
Third trimester is
well, wait a minute. One trimester is 3 months.
That's
right.
Three trimesters would be
6 to 9.
Isn't one trimester 3 months?
No, the first trimester, of course, it's 3, 6, and 9. So
right.
Anything
so
between 6 and 9
can't months,
abort
you can't have an abortion. You're saying
right,
third
right,
trimester.
Right. No, what I'm saying is that if she got pregnant, right? Think about what I'm saying. If this altercation took place in October of last year. It's only January. She's right in the wheelhouse of being able to get an abortion.
Right.
Oh yeah, but no, you were saying it was 3 trimesters.
You said her third trimester.
Yeah, I'm sorry, not 3 trimesters. I'm sorry. You know what I mean? It's the third. You know what I meant?
Well,
okay,
we know what you mean.
Okay.
You were just trying to make sure that the viewers and the listeners knew.
Right.
What
I was saying the third trimester. This is 1 mester, 2 mesters, 3 mesters. So it's a trimester. Her first, of the trimester.
You gotta go break it down.
She, of course, have to break it down. But my point is that it's only been 3 months.
Right, right. What scares me of this whole situation is false rape claims become the new go-to place for shame.
When you say the new place of shame, how do you mean?
No. I mean that it's the go-to place when women have shamed themselves.
And then they're busted.
Once they're busted,
if
I was raped.
Right. If you're caught doing something, what? I just got the greatest email. What about diseases? I hadn't thought of that. That's a great point. If it had been found out that someone caught a disease, that could be another catalyst for anger by the boyfriend. Maybe he had caught chlamydia or herpes or some staph infection. You know what I mean? I'm going to make light of it, but you understand what I'm saying. It's just that there are too many things in this case that just sound. I knew that there was another shoe that was going to drop. I got this story at about 8 o'clock this morning. 7, 8 o'clock this morning is when this story was presented to me, and I read it. And as I was watching the entire day, I kept my eye on the news all day because the only thing that kept running through my mind was that another shoe was going to drop. And when that pregnancy dropped, when I found out that she got pregnant, or it's alleged that she's got pregnant from that, the first thing running through my mind was, why would you rush to get an abortion? You're only in the third month. You come forward on Tuesday. You can use the evidence of that child to prove that Greg Kelly is indeed the father. Where do you get that evidence from now?
Well, maybe this is why the two of them only spoke for a month. Maybe she told him that she was preggers.
Aha.
And then he, maybe that's why communication stopped after that time.
Right. There may have been, hey, I'm pregnant. I don't want to have a baby. We're just fooling around. It's nothing serious. I like you, but I'm not ready to settle down and have any children.
Well,
maybe it was
I'm pregnant and it's your baby and I want to be with you. And then he declined, and she goes and has this abortion, and now because he's declined taking any part in this, that now she's angry with him, and she's charging him with rape.
And it always seems to be something like that. Do you believe, and I'll ask you guys, hey, James is back. Hey, Kool-Aid, what's up?
Hello?
Hey, what's up, James?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right, sir. Okay, let me ask you guys this question. Do you believe that the boyfriend in any way pushed the issue for her to come forward with rape, or do you believe, like, you hear what I'm saying, if there's something nefarious going on, who do you think was the originator of this claim? Whose idea do you think it was? Do you think it was the girlfriend going after Greg Kelly? Like, does it seem more plausible for her to go after Greg Kelly because he didn't want to be the father of her child and she's going to pay him back, or the boyfriend finds out she gets pregnant from Greg Kelly and he wants to pay him back or do him some harm, you know, in some sort of way, having him charged with this, go to jail? Like, which one is more plausible, that this is...
I think that the boyfriend found out. She had to come up with some excuse. She tells the boyfriend that he raped her, that Kelly raped her, and then he says, oh, you have to go to the police. And then, you know, he pushes the issue to go to the police. And now she has no choice because now she's lied to the boyfriend.
Right, so she's stuck. Very, very similar to the Domnell and Donye story in Hofstra University, when a boyfriend catches her after she has sex with five boys and he knows that she's had sex, and her first response is, they raped me. And
right.
And her answer is she doesn't want to appear to be a slut or a tramp.
Right, right.
JC, who
now
do you think
is more plausible? For shame.
Yeah, exactly. Who do you think is more plausible here with the scenario of rape, if indeed is false?
I'm sure he put her up to it.
You think so?
Yeah, I think he put her up to it.
Yeah, but why do you think that he would have put her up to it? Do you think that he would have put her up to it because
calling her
he
bluff.
Found out?
Calling her bluff.
No,
I think she would have been the originator of the whole lie, whatever.
Oh, no doubt. She originated
lie,
it. She originated
me,
it.
I mean,
but I'm sure he told her, well, then you need to do this, because if not, then it was consensual.
Right. So you're saying you believe the boyfriend in this case is being duped.
Right. He's being duped. So, and he's calling, he told her to report it.
Right.
He called her bluff.
Right, his intentions, you believe, are pure.
Right.
Right. James, what are you thinking? Do you know much about the story, or have you heard about it?
I've heard about it. Usually men would not come up with the rational idea of going to the police. He'd want to do as a man and as a boyfriend.
He'd want to confront them.
More physical.
Right, and which is very, very right, Jamie. That's why I believe a little bit of truth to that, because he was the one who saw Commissioner Ray Kelly at an event and confronted him about Greg. You know, because obviously he was very irate and, you know, he wanted to get in somebody's face. This is the police commissioner. It's very rare when somebody comes up and in a threatening manner, screaming and hollering at the top cop of the city. You know what I mean?
Well,
so,
yeah, question.
In his natural habitat.
Yeah, exactly. In his natural habitat, surrounded by his people, you know, who would literally just throw your butt in handcuffs and make you, you know, sweat it out for 48 hours.
My question is this. Now, this guy, because I'm not too familiar with New York City broadcasters. Now, you said this guy was nationally known, the broadcaster himself?
Well, he once was. He used to work with Fox News. To give you a brief breakdown of Greg Kelly, aside from being the son of Commissioner Kelly, who is nationally known, Greg Kelly's dossier is quite stellar. This guy was a Marine fighter plane pilot. He was a war correspondent for Fox during the beginning of the Mission in Iraq war. He was voted most eligible newscaster in the nation.
Really?
Yeah, he's got a...
I wonder if...
Oh, and he's a lieutenant colonel in the National Guard currently. Active.
Okay, well, one would have to wonder. I mean, maybe she saw a payday at the end of it?
No, I think that there's a lot of embarrassment here. I think that there's a lot of shame involved in what happened.
That go-to place for shame, like I said.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very strong possibility that this had everything to do with some sort of shame. You know, being excuse, meeting a celebrity, something.
Or the excuse.
Yeah, and...
The excuse
and,
for shame.
Right, the excuse for shame. And it's sad because I didn't, you know, the pregnancy thing doesn't for a loop here. I knew from the get-go something else had to drop. They've not even gone into the background of this woman. Not that I'm suggesting they should, because there are rape shield laws in this country. But here's the thing. The press, they know the name of the victim. They're just not allowed to release her name. So they know who she is. They know she's not a lawyer. They know what law firm she works in. They know her name. They know everything about her. If they wish to, they can infiltrate every bit of her background they wanted to due to the Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
So that's the reason why so much information has been revealed. The boyfriend, for that matter, who is kind of being a public name in all of this and almost a spokesperson, they could find out a lot about this couple if they wanted to, if there was any domestic violence, if there was anything, you know, obscure about their relationship. They could do that. But again, these two are not the story, and the press refused to do that at the risk of victimizing or, I would almost say, as some sort of victimization of the already alleged victim. It would be like...
Vilifying a victim.
Exactly. Thank you. The word I was looking for. Vilifying the victims in this case. So they refused to do that. It doesn't matter what information that they have. They have been smart, though. They have not accused Greg Kelly as some monster. They have not suggested that he's that way. There have been no reports that he's done this before. No one's come forward. I think that they're going to handle this with kid gloves because of the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case.
Well, I mean, okay. So there has been a case of rape brought forth.
Yeah.
Okay, so she did call in, or she's claiming
yeah,
rape.
She went to the police on Tuesday.
Yeah, she went to the police on Tuesday night. She went to the 13th precinct in Lower Manhattan and reported it to detectives at the 13th precinct.
I'm sorry, does anybody think that maybe any of this is financially motivated?
Well...
Yeah,
JC does slightly. He believes that there is some sort of financial. I believe that this was and when I say crime, I'm talking about if there is indeed a crime of false claim, it is a crime of malice. I don't think it's financially or monetarily motivated at all. I think this is a girl with a boyfriend who is caught with some embarrassment. She met a celebrity. She probably fell head over heels. Was intoxicated. Did something she wasn't supposed to. Cheated on her boyfriend. And now is caught up in a massive cover-up so that she does not appear. Hey, come on. You don't think... It's not like we haven't heard this before. Women putting other men's lives in jeopardy to cover up their misgiving.
Right.
Hold on, JC, go ahead.
What bothers me the most is that protocol hasn't been followed here.
Well,
why hasn't he been arrested?
That's,
why is he being given preferential treatment?
No. Again, I'm telling you the reason why.
I understand that, but I'd be outraged that they hadn't.
No, see, that's the reason why there has been no outcry. Because we're just a year or so off.
I understand that. Off of the Dominique Strauss case.
Yeah,
I understand that. But if proper protocol had been followed and he had been arrested and there had been a whole big news to do with it, a media blitz with regards to it, And maybe, I mean, I see that as the only way that anyone who continues or would deter future accusers of making false claims, as if enough of them, if enough of these come forward, and it's costing the city and the government money, the only way that you're going to be able to
deter false claims?
To deter false claims would be to then start to punish those making the claims.
Well, this is okay. I agree with you there. That 100%. But let me tell you why. Aside from the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case, you have to really consider this. Mary and I talked about this before, and I've talked about it on this show. One of the most important factors about the allegation of rape, especially in this case, one that is 3 months old, is that there is no physical evidence.
Right, no physical evidence.
This is a he said, she said. This would be like saying that this should be treated just like it would have been if she had accused Greg Kelly of robbing her at gunpoint.
Right, but then on the same token, let it go through the justice system. The justice system is supposed to work. And if she's found wrong, then I'm sorry, jail time in a women's prison.
So you're saying that Greg Kelly gets arrested, goes through the system.
Go through the whole process just like anyone else would.
Right, go through the system like anybody else would, find out that it's false, and then she of course, would then be charged. But see,
right.
they're worried about that in this case because an arrest of Greg Kelly would definitely be detrimental to them as a prosecutor's office if indeed they arrested without any evidence. Right now, the only thing they have is an accusation.
As an accusation.
Yes, again,
but still,
that should never be enough to arrest someone, a claim like this. Because, one, we have no physical evidence. It's the key part of any rape investigation. If you've been raped, you must report it immediately. That falls on her. She did not report it immediately. It has to fall on her.
Well,
then,
even as a taxpayer, I'd be plenty damn pissed if I was a taxpayer paying the taxes in New York City that the prosecution had not acted as though it should have. I don't give
a damn if he is the police commissioner's son. JC, this is the problem, though. It is a flawed, there's a flawed system. Okay, Reese and I talked about this earlier as well. If you, and we talked about this on the radio, if you are a murderer, if I lived next door to someone that got murdered and I saw the person that murdered them, and I go to the police and say, you know, Joe over here was murdered by Sam did it. Well, of course they're going to go and they're going to question Sam and they're going to investigate. But Sam proof that Sam did it other than than Josie's word, then Sam's not going to go to jail. Sam doesn't get arrested. You can't hold Sam because there is no evidence. You can't go and hold Sam until you have evidence, some type of evidence than Josie's mouth.
You might as well eliminate the language innocent until proven guilty. You might as well eliminate it.
We all know that the system doesn't work that way. But when it comes to, you don't treat a murderer or a suspected murderer the same way that you treat suspected rapists.
Yes,
there are more false accusations when it comes to rape than
Mary makes a very valid point because here's where Mary makes a very, very valid point. In the criminal justice system, especially with the district attorney's office, do you know that there's an unwritten rule about which cases are the easiest to convict? If you were to take the three of murder, rape, attempted murder, rape, burglary, robbery. If you were to break them down, the top three, the one that you can get, number one being the one you can get a conviction of the most, rape is on the top of the list.
Right.
Why? And the reason why rape is on the top of the list is because they're easier to get convictions on because all you
need is a lower burden of proof.
Right. They carry a lower burden of proof. And I think in this case, because it's so high profile, and this does deal with somebody who's a high profile person, and it's an allegation that came out that apparently happened 3 months ago. That's why they are handling this with kid gloves. They are making any hasty moves on the part of the district attorney's office, because they have to investigate it. Any hasty moves by them will be frowned upon if they get it wrong.
Okay. Now, having said that, and everything that we already know about New York City prosecution's office, me, say, for example, I was falsely accused. If I had to take my case to the highest court in the land, and let's say I was falsely accused and I ended up getting off because my accuser, let's just say, for example, refuses to testify.
Right.
Because she knows she's wrong. And she knows she made it up. I would take it to the highest court of the land. If I had to take it to international court and sue the United States of America, the prosecution office, they'd have to pay for it. Never mind this immunity.
Well,
you're
lives. You're absolutely right. Because, see, this is the thing. They know there's no penalty for a false claim. But there's no penalty for false claim by the accuser. There's no penalty for them. The most they get nowadays is 6 months in jail. In some cases, they get probation. I believe Heidi Jones, who made a false rape of claim by a male Hispanic that didn't exist, she got 9 days of community service. 9 full days of community service.
Wow.
And, you know, Beauty Gonzalez only got a year in jail for her false rape claim of William McCaffrey, even after he spent 4 years of a 20-year sentence before they vacated it. The point is that prosecutors are very seldom to put rape accusers in jail because of the fact that there is no real sort of justice system for those falsely accused. There's no advocacy for them. But because we live in a society that there's an ardent support system for victims of sexual violence, and it's such a lobby with the district attorney's office of any state, for that matter, to make sure that they convict as much as they can for anybody accused, that is where the problem lies. And you're never, ever going to get anybody to go after false rape claims because it will devalue those, well, they believe, and I'm not saying that's true, but they believe that it will devalue those who have made legitimate claims. And they want to hinder that by not giving anybody who makes a false, or even damper down the reporting of false rape claims.
That makes me wonder, how much trouble can I get in if I created a website for donotdatethisone.com
There's actually websites out there like that.
Yeah, that's
already
been done.
There's actually a website out there that's like that.
Well, you know, there's a blog.
Dog.com, something like that.
He's a dog.com because, yeah, of course, he gave me genital warts. But we're talking about rape cases.
Well, you know what? I'll give you actually a website that's very, very popular, and it was one of the websites that I went to when I first came home. If you look up False Rape Society, and they're on blogspot.com, they report every story in the news, rarely covered by mainstream media, of women who have made false rape claims. And some of these claims, and this is the reason why I deal with this, and we all are in consensus here, that, you know, we all have some skepticism. The reason why is because we've seen people make these claims for lesser reasons. You know, there was an MSNBC report on women who had claimed false rape. A woman charged a police officer with being raped, and the reason why she did it was because she got pulled over by the cop and received a $135 ticket. When they confronted her and asked her why she did it, she thought that, in her own words, that the police officer had discriminated against her because she didn't drive a fancy car. And so because of a $135 ticket and feeling discriminated against, she was willing to put that police officer in jail for 25 years. added to that, the only thing that saved the police officer was his dashboard camera. And it was just a few years after they had placed dashboard cameras in those police cars in that city. So, again, the reasons have been simple. Heidi Jones, her excuse was even better. She said she was having a hard time at her job and at home, and she wanted some sympathy. Bjorny Gonzalez, because her friends beat her up because she left them at a nightclub to go hang out with William McCaffrey at another club. She flat left her friends stranded without a way to get home, and when they were beating her up out in the parking lot, she made up the story so they'd stop hitting her. So, you know, we've seen this in so many cases. That's why with this, there's so much skepticism and so many red flags about this. I think the district attorney's office in New York, having been scorned once so badly, this was an international story with Dominique Strauss-Kahn. They are not willing to make that mistake again. And this is important for them, and they realize how important it is. We're not going to get egg on our face again. We've got to cross our T's and dot our I's. If he did this, we are going to get indisputable evidence that he committed this crime. And I
well, I think that what needs to, like, I don't know, you know, they need to put something else in place. First of all, I don't think that you should be able to wait 3 months, 4 years, 5 years, until after the fact, after the alleged incident, to come forward and press charges against someone, and then just boom, their life is over immediately. They're in jail. Everything is turned upside down. Their life never ends up being the same. It never goes back to being the quality that it was for the most part. So if something like that happens to you, you should have to report. There should be a statute of limitations. And I don't care what women's activist group is out there fighting for women's rights. And women, if there's any women listening tonight, you better take heed, because what's going to end up happening is that we as women, and making these false accusations, are going to end up hurting ourselves in the end. When something like this does actually happen, no one is going to believe you because you have cried wolf so many times.
Well, I think we've reached a fever pitch on this, Mary, and you're very, I mean, you nailed it. In that,
yeah.
That's where the problem is going to lie. When the report came out, yeah, when a report came out many years ago, done by the Air Force, it was a scientific study. When it reported that 41% of rape claims in the United States were false claims, and a lot of those claims were, you know, were girls who were embarrassed about the sexual tryst that they had. Another key factor in sexual assaults that turned out false were reasons where people were in other situations of trouble. I don't know if you guys follow college basketball, but the Louisville coach Rick Pitino had an affair with a woman, had sex with her late night in a restaurant. Because he had sex with her and got her pregnant, she decided with her husband, who was Rick Pitino's assistant coach. Yeah, her husband, Rick Pitino's assistant coach, conspired to blackmail him for $10 million. When the blackmail had been thwarted by police, when she was arrested, the first thing she told police officers was that Rick Pitino raped her. And that, in and of itself, there are reasons why these allegations come out that are false. At 41%, that's extremely high. Another statistic that baffles the hell out of me is this. They say one out of three divorce cases land with an allegation of the wife to the husband that he molested the child in order for them to confirm custody. And that is a tactic used often by women in divorce proceedings. So
in order to get back at the husband.
To get back at the husband and to maintain custody, this is a tactic used by women, and in some cases, it's a tactic used by lawyers.
Yeah,
will use this.
Lawyers are some of the dirtiest, dirtiest sons of biscuit eaters on the planet, I tell you. I've dealt with a few. I've watched a few. Now, I'm telling you, I haven't dealt with them personally, but I've watched a few of them and their tactics. But a quick note there. I checked out that False Weight Society.
Yes.
And I'd like to applaud the Denver, Colorado, the Larimer County Police Department. They arrested a woman for reporting a fictitious cop impersonator assaulted her. She made a false claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they just arrested her for it.
Yeah, but how much is a fourth class felony,
though?
Oh, it's, what is it? Is it called a what?
A class four felony.
Well, it's like a D felony. It's one of the lowest felonies.
Yeah.
Which probably only gets you a year in prison.
Well, then I think then she should rot in there for that 1 year. I mean, literally rot in there for that 1 year.
Yeah, but
I mean,
if you gave them a month
at least, you know what I mean?
Well, again, some of them don't even get sentenced. They need to do longer than that.
No. I said at the very least.
Personally,
I think that you should get the time that your accuser or the person that you've accused should get. I think you should get at least half that time, if not all of it.
And you're absolutely right. Not only that, if it's proven that you have ultimately lied.
If
it's proven that you ultimately lied, not if there's some skepticism in your story, but if it's proven ultimately that you lied, then I believe that the penalty should be whatever it is that the accused would have gotten. And that would deter anybody that claims ever again.
I didn't know that they had sites out here for it. I'm thinking YouTube channel now.
I don't understand where all this even started. Like, what is going through your mind when you decide that, I was really a slut last weekend and I had sex with, five guys and now I feel so shameful and, my friend Jody found out, so now I'm going to have to accuse one of these guys of rape, so now I'm only a slut to four guys instead of five. This happened to me and I got pregnant. I had sex with this guy and I got pregnant. Now he doesn't want anything to do with the baby, so I'm going to accuse him of raping me. I'm going to get back at him. What's going on in your brain that is allowing you to even think that that would be something sensible to do or something rational to do? I mean, something
has not
going to the top floor, if anybody that does that.
No, I don't. Listen, here's the factor about that. When all of us get an opportunity, we have to look up the definition of this word. I think that many people should. We should, because a lot of people use this word in passing, but they don't really understand what the symptom is. And who these people are sociopaths. You have to understand what that means. A sociopath does not see anything wrong in what they're doing when it protects their own ego.
Right.
There's no rationale into doing what they do when it protects their own ego, their own self-image. You see, believing a sociopath, if their sociopath is forced to believe that they've done something wrong, then what they do is they have to be accountable. This on that, I have to realize it, and then they'll go into depression and a whole nine yards. A sociopath never ever takes responsibility for their action. They always have an excuse for what it is that happens to them or things that happen in our life. It's always something else or someone else's fault. Ever
the professional victim player.
Right, the professional victim player. Everything.
Munchausen by proxy.
Say again? What'd you say?
It's a syndrome called Munchausen by proxy.
Exactly.
Where basically it's the attention getter, the sympathy. They play the sympathy card. Because it makes them seem, the more pathetic they seem, the more sympathy they seem to gather for themselves. And
break your freaking finger.
Well, no, the reason why they want...
Cut your toe off. I mean, I don't know.
The reason why
they want... Go down a flight of stairs.
The reason why they want that attention is because that makes them seem worthy. The attention
right.
that they get gives them a sense of worthiness. You know, they feel that they feel an accomplishment in getting that worthiness from those other people. It's not so much a woe is me sort of thing or a self-pity thing. It's gaining something from that syndrome. And Munchausen is the best way. It is Munchausen by proxy. They
yeah.
they have to get that attention in order for them to feel worthy.
Right.
And they know that they're going to get it, especially in something like this. This woman, if indeed she's lying, you know the attention from her friends and family. He's a monster. You're a victim. Oh, you're going to be okay. You're going to feel
good.
We'll get through this together.
Right, exactly.
You're the strong person. You're the hero here.
Exactly.
But when you lie, if she is lying, and for anyone else that has lied about something like this, the attention that you get, I can only imagine, because people will continue to bring it up. You know, they don't let it go. Your friends, your family, they're always going to think that if there's something wrong with you, it's because of what allegedly happened to you. And you lie about something like that, and then you continuously get this attention about it, and eventually that attention starts to get annoying. And then you're sorry that you ever, you know, made this accusation or whatever, and then you drive yourself even crazier than you were from the get-go. I don't get it.
Why would you want to be a victim?
I don't understand. Do you want to be a victim,
Mary?
Is it something that's not you know going off in the brain properly? Are you in a lack of serotonin? I mean, what is it?
Mary,
no serotonin,
I don't.
Rather?
Mary,
I have an answer for that.
Go, please. Go ahead, Jimmy.
All right. Why would you want to be a victim? Because in today's society, the victim is made the hero.
That's right.
It's not the fact that you've blamed someone else. It's the fact that you've gone through this tragedy and you've come out the other side. Look how strong you are for taking this person to court,
right.
going into the public eye. Look
right.
how strong you are.
You're brave.
You're brave. It's almost like a positive reinforcement.
Right. The reward, as you said, Jamie, the reward is worth the risk.
Mm-hmm.
What you get in the reward is the relief. You get a sense of confidence. You get a sense of reassurance. You get a sense of bravery, as you mentioned. There are people who are now treating you in a way that you've never been treated before. There is a sick sense of accolades that you receive now. Because
you're
of this
now.
Trauma. Yeah, exactly. But it's this trauma that you get, you know, the trauma that you've endured has now given you a sense of purpose. And you feel accomplished through it. And
if you just are living on this victim syndrome and you're not really ever the victim, how can you – it's not sustainable. You can't sustain that forever. I don't care – I've been through things. We've all been through things that we've come through. But for me, I mean, I can't wrap my head around it because I would never want anybody to look at me like, oh, you know, well, you've been through so much and, you know, you've come such a far way or you've come such a long way or whatever. No, we all go through things.
What?
Everybody has problems in life.
What, you don't, Mary? Mary?
What?
I think that they're not thinking of that when that question's put to them, baby, you need to explain this.
Right.
Once they're told, baby, you need to explain this or something's wrong, something fishy, something doesn't add up. Now she's nervous,
right.
Blood pressure's gone up, and the first thing she could think of is the only way I'm going to get out of this and end up with some flowers at the end of the night is I was raped.
And it will be her excuse for the rest of her life. It will be her excuse for the rest of her life. She will find ways to get sympathy for everything that she does that's wrong. She will be able to do that anytime she wants to now.
Right.
Or
you know,
he,
I
for
told
that
you,
matter.
No, every
umbrella.
Situation. Right. It's her umbrella of protection. Every time she gets into a situation, she'll get into an argument with her boyfriend, And she'll just say, oh, well, you know, with what happened to me, I've never been the same again. And she'll keep
it
that
becomes,
running.
It becomes an excuse. It becomes an excuse to be a failure.
Right, exactly. An excuse for misgivings. This is now her get-out-of-jail-free card every time she gets into a situation.
And in some cases, they'll believe it.
Of course they will. It doesn't matter whether or not it's skeptical. I'll put it to you like this. Even if this report comes out, and we'll never be able to know, but even if the report comes out that she made a false claim, the people who surround her or who are involved in her life, none of them will ever, ever concede to the fact that she would lie. They would all stand around and reassure her still. Well, they just didn't want to pursue it. Oh, it's because he's a celebrity. They'll make it in the world for her. Even if the story completely is investigated with, you know.
It'll go farther than that because you found where the criminal or the liar has given more sympathy because, well, they're built an excuse.
Right.
Well, gee, you felt you had to lie about this. What was going on with you?
You know,
and this was a cry for help, and maybe we should be there for you more.
Oh, you know what? And again, that's enough. And in the Kathleen Rice, who was the district attorney in Long Island, in the Domnell and Danya case at Hofstra University, with the five boys in the bathroom, when she gave Domnell 6 months of therapy for accusing those four of the five boys were placed in jail with $250,000 cash bond. Cash were put in jail. They gave her 6 months of therapy, and the reasons why they said was that they figured she was going through a very traumatic time in her life and needed mental help. And I'm sitting up here going, she needed mental help. You know, maybe you should try putting her in some sort of sex therapy class because that's the only help she needs. Maybe she needs, like, Sexaholics Anonymous. She doesn't need mental help. I mean, what are they going to teach her? Like, do you know that you shouldn't tell fake rape stories? Is that the kind of therapy she's going to get? Maybe the therapy that she needs is a little bigger than that. But they thought that she went through mental trauma. They made her a victim anyway, even though she was a liar. They still turned her into a victim. They found another way to victimize her. They never victimized the boys because, in fact, in the Daily News the next day, there was a reporter who wrote an op-ed page that told the boys they had nothing to cheer for. You were five boys having sex with one girl. How skeevy are you? And I'm sitting up here going,
wow.
I'm sitting up here like, wait a minute. You're still finding a way to victimize these, I mean, to excoriate these boys? Yes, they're young. Yes, their libidos are probably off the hook, you know, but they had a willing girl who seemed like she was consenting to this behavior. She's in the video smiling and laughing, and you still go after it. Only thing you want to mention is, yes, Domnell lied, but you boys were skeevy and you were scum anyway. I'm like, it's never ever been argued that anybody in this case wasn't scum, but if you don't include Ms. Ndanye in that assessment, you're being partisan. They were all involved in this. And the only person who decided to criminal case and make this a media case is the person who lied. The only person in this case who is a criminal is her. And that's just the bottom line. The only person in this case is a criminal. All right, folks. Well, anyway, I can't believe we spent an hour on this. Anyway, when we come back, I've got a serious question. Are you ever allowed to scold the President of the United States?
Don't you dare.
Jan Brewer in Arizona did it. When the President touched down in Arizona on the tarmac, she's been getting a lot of heat and, in some cases, a lot of praise. We'll argue it when we come back at 3:30. I don't even know how I'm going to deal with this.
park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Mary had a little lamb, it sleeps white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome back, folks. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com/ReeseOnTheRadio. The number's 347-308-8701. There was a late-breaking story yesterday evening, roughly about 8, 9 o'clock last night. Whether or not it's newsworthy, I don't know, remains to be seen. But it doesn't matter that it was or it wasn't. I thought it brought up a bigger topic because we've been really, really seeing a contentious United States of America as far as politics are concerned, the left versus the right, Republicans versus Democrats, you know, the Tea Party versus the Occupy movement. It's been very contentious. I think that the country today is probably more split than even it was during the Bush years, or in the latter part of the Bush years, post-2004, after the Iraq War had just begun. The question is that if there's anything that I saw quite often during the Bush years that often angered me was the absolute disdain for President Bush, where people on the Senate floor were calling George W. Bush treasonous, where people were pretty much calling him totalitarian in many cases, in some cases calling him stupid, calling him the Antichrist. Those, with the exception of treasonous in some cases, some of those criticisms have also been made of President Obama, but not on the level as far as Congress is concerned. We don't hear congressmen on the floor, with the exception of that "you lie" during the State of the Union address back in 2009, or 2010, I believe it was. Anyway, and not considering that, because that was one time, and that was obviously when the congressman, a Republican, screamed out, "You lie," in the middle of the State of the Union address, which was absolutely uncalled for. But we saw people on the Senate floor during Senate hearings excoriating George W. Bush in such a villainous way. Like I said, calling him unpatriotic, calling him treasonous, you know, calling him the Antichrist. These things were, you know, vicious. You can find them anywhere. That being said, because I was supportive of George W. Bush, which is pretty much why I found it so amazingly, you know, ridiculous. I mean, I thought it was insane for people to do this. And we've not really seen that with Barack Obama. We've seen more pundits and people in interviews, even congressmen in interviews, they've not used real harmful words, but they've used words like socialist. They've called them a Marxist. These things are bad, but I would never ever mark them as bad as treasonous or the Antichrist. They would never go that far. But they are awful things to say about the president. You can believe his philosophies are Marxist, and you can believe his philosophies are socialist. But to call him those things, I believe, always will be a step above the fray. I do it, and you probably heard me here. I've ripped the guy apart, but I rip him on policy alone. I don't think that there's ever been anybody here who can argue that I've not dealt with my with my disagreements with this administration, unless they were involved with policy. I've never, ever taken a personal crack at the President of the United States in any way. Never taken any pot shot. It's been demeaning. I may not like him, but, you know, okay, the worst I've ever said on my blog was I said, how can the press not look at this man like an idiot? Because he said unemployment checks create jobs. And it was an idiotic claim. So to my point, when I heard the report that when President Obama was getting off the plane in Arizona, he was met by Governor Jan Brewer. Jan Brewer wrote a book called Scorpions for Breakfast, which I believe is a metaphor saying that, you know, she eats scorpions for breakfast. You know, she's a tough lady. And in her book, she talks about a meeting that she had with President Obama when he came to Arizona. And there was a contention about protecting the border and the Arizona immigration law that they passed. And she explains that the president was very put-offish and condescending, but she met President Obama when he arrived, and she wanted to greet him and say hello and pass him a letter inviting him down to the border, which is what she and just-resigned Gabby Giffords and John McCain had been trying to get him to come down there and do. When she handed him the letter, she believes he took the letter, kind of put it in his pocket and handed it off to somebody, and then went on to scold her about excerpts in her book, Scorpions for Breakfast. Well, her response, as she claims, you know, was what it was, and she says that he then got up. I mean, he just pretty much left the conversation in the middle of them talking, and she became extremely flustered. Here's what Governor Jan Brewer said on Greta Van Susteren last night, just a little after 10:30.
Well, I was trying to be there in a tone to welcome him to Arizona, and I was very pleased that he was coming to Arizona to see part of Arizona's comeback. And I had written a handwritten note to him to deliver, welcoming him to Arizona and to thank him for being here, and gave him the letter, and he immediately took umbrage, if you will, with my book that I wrote, Scorpions for Breakfast, and was somewhat of disgruntled, if you will, about the way he was portrayed in the book.
So he actually read it. Did he actually say anything to you like you got it wrong, you said this about me and this is not true?
Well, he actually said, I asked him, I said, oh, you read my book? And he said, I read excerpts from it. And, you know, the bottom line is that the book is factual. The book is true. I want our borders secured. I want our nation protected. He wants amnesty. And we're never going to agree on that. And we agreed to disagree on that subject. So I don't know why he was surprised by my book, but he evidently is. And he's very thin-skinned in regards to it.
And so that's what it is that she what she said. She said that she believed that President Obama was thin-skinned. He had only read excerpts of the book, and you know, whatever it is he received, he was upset about. So here's the question. So the president approaches you about something that you wrote in your book about him. You're not calling him names or anything, but you're just talking about your meeting with him. He believes that it's a mischaracterization of the meeting. How do I put this? Do you believe that Jan Brewer was out of line? Because the photos that you see on the news, it looks like she's wagging her finger at the president, sort of telling him off, but she expressed that she moves her hands when she speaks, and it really wasn't the case. The president also has expressed, well, through the White House spokespeople, that that wasn't the case. She was not wagging her finger at him. She was just talking, motioning with her hand. So that's been confirmed. But do you think that there's a level of which we can talk about the president of the United States? And, like, is there a line to cross? And if there is a line, did Jan Brewer cross it in any way? Or did President Obama initiate that exchange, causing this sort of heated discussion, as many have described it, to happen in and of itself? And I have my opinion, so I mean, I'll let the crew give theirs first. And I figured it's only right, because it's a topic like this, that we have to let the Kool-Aid man go first. James, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure, because from what I'm hearing, I'm not sure what the big deal is, okay? If he read, even read, he just read excerpts of the book. All right, if it's a book that's in any way a criticism of him, you know, or anyone, for that matter, if it was of me, I wouldn't want to read it either, you know? I'd read a little excerpt. Okay, let me at least figure out what's being said, just in case. But otherwise, I don't have to read it if I don't want to. And if I, and I can say something about it. I mean, yeah. All right. Well, you asked. She did say she asked him if you read my book, which was kind of self-aggrandizing. You know?
No. James, she doesn't mention the book until he mentions it. In fact, he starts it off with, "I read your book."
No.
He mentioned the book.
She said, she said that she asked him, "Did you read my book?" I read excerpts.
No. When he brings up the book, he says to her, he initiates it. He said,
okay.
He said, "I didn't like some of the things you wrote in your book." And then she responds, "I read my book." And he responds, "Only excerpts." So,
oh, okay. All right.
Confirming he didn't read the whole book, he just read excerpts. It's pretty clear he only read the book himself.
Well, of course. Well, why wouldn't he? But, all right. But in answer to your question, or with another question, she can say, all right, if he was a bit standoffish, all right. But he could also say, well, you know what? He has the right to say, "I didn't like your book." You know, it's not like he has to say, "Oh, you know, great book, even though it was against me, hey, keep up the good work." So what was he supposed to do?
What she wrote about was a meeting that they had had in the Oval Office. It was an encounter that they had had in the Oval Office regarding the border situation, and they agreed to disagree. And I think that, you know, maybe in her book it says, I believe this is what I heard, that in the book it says that that wasn't exactly a pleasant meeting, in my words, that it wasn't exactly a pleasant meeting. And, you know, maybe it was made of the assumption that, you know, it wasn't a pleasant meeting on his end, you know.
Well,
so I think that that's why he didn't like the whatever excerpt he read from the book.
Well,
said something about she felt that he was being condescending and somewhat, I guess, dismissive.
That's correct. He was very standoffish and condescending, she wrote in her book, and he thought that was a mischaracterization of him. But now let me say this in the interest of full disclosure. I believe 100% that Jan Brewer's got a legitimate beef. Why? Very simple. The President of the United States is suing the state of Arizona. Does anybody here know that?
No.
Okay. He's suing the state of Arizona over the immigration law. He sent the Department of Justice and Eric Holder down there to file a lawsuit against the state of Arizona for their immigration law, because Barack Obama believes in amnesty for people who cross the border, and Jan Brewer is trying to you know, maintain those borders and keep them out. But again, when you file suit against, and there clearly Jan Brewer in her office one day and finds out that the President of the United States is filing a lawsuit against you, you're bringing on a fierce and a contentious situation. You are clearly setting that up. So her being down there at the tarmac at Air Force One when he comes off the plane, I know he's already defensive that she's there, because he doesn't want to have to look her in the eye. She's the reason why he's filed this lawsuit.
Now, wait a minute. President Obama believes in amnesty. Anybody that crosses the border should just be able to come into the country.
That's not how it is. All right, that is not how it is, and that's a mischaracterization. What he was saying is amnesty is for those who have been here for a number of years.
Right.
All right, they've already been here.
Right. He believes in amnesty for those who have been here for a number of years and, as you know, although they say have been productive members of society, whatever.
Productive, correct. Well, and then he says that, as he said in the
productive
State of the Union,
by using
he wants them to earn
funding.
Their right. Excuse me?
Earn their right by what? By taking up our government funding? By taking up the funds that we have to help people that are in not so good situations? I mean,
well,
whatever.
To clarify, government funding. Hold on.
That's a personal opinion and a personal tax.
James, let me say this. I think where Mary's coming from is this. If you are a Mexican who comes into the border, let's say you're living here for 5 years. You're of working age. Let's say you're 25 to 30 years old. And you are working off the books because you do not only not have residency, you do not have a social security number, you are not on the grid. But you are working a legitimate job, be it at a diner, be it at working at landscaping, working in construction. You are doing that job. You are collecting cash from your employer. So let's say you're making at minimum $300 a week. And that's, you know, it's barely a livable wage, and we won't argue that. But it's tax-free. That's a fact. Now, if you're 25 to 30 years old and you're making $300, every $2 that you spend in the United States, two of those dollars are going back home to your country of origin. Because that's the reason why you came to this country. Because your family members need the money, and that's why you're out here working and risking your life as an illegal here doing it. So now you're double
risking your life?
You could end up in jail, James. I mean, you're risking your life. You can end up in jail. You're risking your well-being. Okay.
Mary, let me just finish this point
because it's very valid. It's very valid. You're already collecting $300 that isn't taxable. So therefore, the federal government is not receiving that tax money. That's one. Two, you're sending half of that revenue back to where? To your country of origin, be it Mexico, Nicaragua, Guatemala, wherever it is, but you're sending $2 back. The money that you're making in the United States, $150 of it, is being spent on an economy where? While you're making the money here. So not only is the government losing out on tax dollars, but they're losing out on money that you would be spending here if you were a resident. So the government should be very, very concerned about them not getting what it is that their fair due while everyone else who's living in the country is paying their taxes. So when you have to pay your taxes at 35%, the richest part, you pay 50% of your wages, and they're taking your money, and you are living in our country, not paying any taxes, and you're not spending most of your money, you're sending most of it to another economy, then people have a legitimate, and not only that, you're also free health care. You're getting free health care you never have before, which skyrockets the price of health care for citizens who do
have health care. When do we have free health care?
Well, what do you think happens?
No, they're getting free health care through the state.
Yes, they are. They get free health care, James. You should see what happens in Los Angeles today. They get free health care. And remember, as the price skyrockets.
Okay. All right. All right. And now.
I'm listening.
Hello?
Okay.
All right. Which is another thing for the amnesty. Instead of rewarding that behavior by sending them, or what you think is a crime, is they've already gathered up this money, this alleged money. They've already gathered up this alleged experience and things, and then you send them back to another country. That revenue, that experience, that body is lost. Okay, because you've now sent it back with everything it's garnered while they were here. What he was trying to say, and what he's been trying to point out, is that if you matriculate them in, right, you indoctrinate them in, then they're on the grid. Then they start paying taxes. Then they start spending their money here.
Well, this is true, but what Jan Brewer's issue is that what she wants to do is to close off that border. That's one. Close the border completely, and then this will force them to come in legally, become legal residents, pay their taxes, be a part of the system, be on the grid. And their argument about amnesty is that what she's trying to do is to stop the illegal passage through her state, which is a border state. And that's, again, and then being sued for protecting herself and her. By the way, do you know, I don't know if you know this, do you know what's the number one state for kidnapping? No. And it's by the border of Mexico. That's and those kidnappings all have to do with the drug trade coming through the Mexican and United States border through that drug trafficking. So, and they're killing people in the hundreds or the thousands for that matter nowadays. And what she's trying to do is to protect her own citizens. What she finds odd in President Obama, and I'll give you my assessment of what I think of the exchange that they had at the airport. Her problem with President Obama is that he appears to be more concerned with Mexicans crossing the border illegally than the United States citizens who deserve the right and have earned the right to be protected by their president. And, I mean, that's a, if, I mean, if not, I mean, if you don't agree, please tell me.
And if I can, let me, I live, okay, so everybody knows where I live, right outside of Washington, D.C. I have, and I'm fluent, speak, read, and write Spanish. And this doesn't go just for Spanish people, this for of the people from the Latino descent, this is for anybody that's here legally. But what I have seen with my own two eyes is people come into this country illegally. You can buy a Social Security card. You can, someone will make you one. It is from the Social Security Administration. They have, you know, people get jobs in the Social Security Administration. They get jobs in DMV, people that are already residents here. And then they start to, you know, get paid off on the side to make people fictitious driver's license or, you know, fake Social Security cards. They're real, but they're fake because that's not really the person. And then these people go, and apply for welfare. So now they're getting food stamps. They're getting a check. Or they're getting Section 8, and then they're working off the books, and then they're sending three-quarters of the money of what they're making off the books to their country so that in 10 years from now they can go back to their country or bring more people here from their country to make more money, and they go back home to their country, and they live like kings and queens because now they have 500 houses. They buy used cars here, and they send those used cars back. They fix the used cars up. They put them on a train and then on a boat and send them back to their country and sell them in their country and make, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. So this is a problem.
And this is a problem. This is a problem in America, period. It is not the illicit or singular purview of the illegal immigrant. All right? A fake ID, please. Illegal immigrants are not the only ones who buy, sell, and proliferate fake IDs.
So what?
You know, you can't just put that off on one.
It's not about putting it off on one game.
We're talking about one group. We're talking about illegal residents. No, of course we're talking about one group. We're not saying that they're the only group that does it. We're talking about the group the illegal aliens that are using it. Because they're the subject matter, but in this case, to give you a broader scope, a better scope of what it is that I'm trying to say here is, imagine with everything I just said about the money that they're not spending and the American citizens who are here legally, even some of the Mexicans, better American citizenship or residency, who are on the grid, who are paying their taxes, who are paying their fair share,
and also sending money back home.
But they're is still being taxed, and they're still a part of the system. Mm-hmm. American rights. They've earned the rights to be American, and they deserve the protection of the United States. But even some of them are saying now that they believe that they're being fleeced because some of their illegal neighbors are not having to, you know, pay the consequences that they pay or the protections that they pay for. With that being said, to then have the President of the United States slap you in the face, you're an American citizen. Your president is an American citizen. To slap your state in the face to say, you won't let illegals into this country, now I'm going to sue you for it. again, this is it's almost an act of treason by your own president. How are you protecting illegals or trying to mandate things for illegals and don't want to protect me first? I'm first. I've earned the right as a taxpayer to be protected first. As an American citizen, suing me is nothing more than a slap to my face. I mean, come on. Why would the president of the United States sue an American state? Why? To protect illegals?
No, it's not to protect illegals. And good God, it's just such a narrow view. All right, first and foremost, the United States of America was founded on the fact that anyone could come.
No.
And anyone can make their way here and live the American dream.
Right.
Okay.
If you want to do it legally, you can come here and do it legally. But if you don't want to do it legally, you have no intentions of becoming legal here, then you should not be able to stay here.
James, the country is just like someone's house, and you can't separate the two. I can't come into your house, squat in one of your bedrooms, and then say I deserve to be here because I made it. Because I made it over the border. I don't get the
free and live rent free
and
eat up all the food and not do any housework and not do and this
I
country.
I don't know who's living rent free here. Where are these people who are living?
They're living rent free, James, or they're living a large modicum of free when they're collecting Section 8 from the government, and the government's paying most of their rent check. That's being paid by the taxpayer. So an illegal alien is coming in taking my tax dollars to pay for them to live, and they're not American citizens. And that's not that. I mean, forget about fair, because fair is subjective. It's not right.
I just don't think it's as black and white as you people are trying to paint
it out. Well, you know what I like about that, James? I think that most people who are on this, who are against, or pardon me, are for the amnesty of these illegals, want to keep it a gray topic, because they think that there's so many other aspects of it, James. Let me put it to you this way. I'm going to take Mary. Mary is in her 30s. If Mary is pregnant today and her husband move to France, Mary's baby is an American citizen. If Mary moves to Russia, is an American citizen. If Mary moves to Abu Dhabi, Mary's baby is an American citizen. No matter where you go as an American, no matter where you are, he stays there and delivers the baby is American. This is the only country where if you are not a legal resident, you fly into America, you fly in from France, you have a baby in America, your baby is an American. If your baby is born on American soil, and the definition is called anchor babies, many immigrants do that. They come into our country through the border. They have a baby here. The baby automatically becomes an American citizen because they're born here. And then what is immigration forced to do? To leave the mother with the child, even though they're illegal, because you can't separate the two. So now the law is protecting illegal activity through proxy, in essence, through a pregnancy. And this woman is getting benefits to feed her child. Now think about that. She's getting all of those benefits to feed, house, clothe her child, and it is done off the backs of the American citizens who paid their bills, who paid their taxes. And again, you still think that's fair? Of course it isn't fair. And again, I don't like to use the word fair because fair is subjective. Anybody can determine what's fair. That is just irresponsible. It's irresponsible for us as a country to allow that to happen. And I think that's where Jan Brewer makes the biggest argument. The biggest argument is that this is what people are doing to abuse our borders. And you want to sanction that, President of the United States, by suing your own country, your own countrymen. You want to sue them to protect people we believe are fleecing and committing a crime. Now, having said that, Jan Brewer was wrong for what you did. what she should have done was take it on the chin. When President Obama came down those steps and he said, I saw what you wrote about me in my book, and let's be quite honest, this isn't the day for us to discuss it, but you know what, we'll discuss it on another time. She should have just left it at that. If she got flustered and upset or whatever it was, or angry because he liked what was said in the book, she should have known that the president was not going to be happy that he was even viewed as condescending or off-putting. She should have known that. She should have known. She must not have thought that the book was anonymous just because it was 200 on the number 256 on the Amazon list. But by the way, it shot up to number 56 today. She wrote a book. It was number 256. It's number 56 today after her exchange. So, I mean, for all intents and purposes, I guess it was a great marketing tool for her book, which was kind of a colossal flop. But no, under no circumstances do you confront the president in an open forum like that where there's press around to create this kind of melee. And I think that on her part, being a woman, I think she got to let her emotions get the best of her. You still got to respect the office of the president of the United States, ever one up them. Not in that regard. You can ask the president a question that he may be flustered about, but the idea is never, ever to embarrass your president, because once you allow your president to show weakness, other countries see that. Now, he could be weak on his policies, but as a country, when we show our president to be weak in that kind of forum and in a disrespectful way, we're dead wrong. We can't allow that to happen. And regardless of what it is that I think about the man, no, I don't think that it ever would have happened. You were surprised I feel that way, right? Come on. Aren't you surprised I feel that way?
Actually, yes.
Yeah, see? You'd be surprised. I consider myself as honest and straight as I possibly can. When I saw it, I was a little put off, because nobody wants to see it, because you know what it is they're going to say about Jan Brewer, aside from the fact that she's a woman doing it to him, but she's a white woman. If anybody's going to make a charge of race...
Oh, Lord, here we go.
Whoa. Anybody's going to make a charge... Let's be honest. Come on, her shaking her finger at the president, the first thing people are going to say, would she have done that to George W. Bush? Would she have done that to Reagan? Like, would she have... It is disrespectful, James. You can't lie. It wasn't disrespectful.
I'm not saying it wasn't disrespectful.
Okay,
President confirmed the fact that that was just the way that
right.
she was speaking. A lot of people speak with their hands. Us being New Yorkers, you know that. I know that. I'm very animated when I talk. Whether it be on the phone and I'm sitting by myself talking, I'm still animated. All by myself if I'm talking. It doesn't matter. So, you know, that's neither here nor there. Nobody can make those allegations because the president himself has already said that that was not the case.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, we've got
to... I know you wanted to make something out of it, but so sorry.
No. I mean, you can't really make anything out of it. You know, again, like I said, I think that, again, it gave an opportunity for pundits and people in the media to make it into something that it wasn't. Unfortunately for her, it didn't. It just looked like a heated exchange. I don't know what... I mean... If it had been a man, it probably would have been deemed more racist. I mean, you don't agree with that?
No.
Okay. No.
Right,
and
okay.
I think you're starting to see racism everywhere, man.
Who, me? Oh, you think?
Yeah.
You think I have my racism glasses on?
Yeah.
You have them on 24/7.
I do.
Yeah, ebony glasses. Yes.
My ebony glasses. Racism, I love it. Hey, by the way, JC, are you there? Hold on, let's
Yeah.
JC, do me a favor. Do we have that story about our favorite mayor?
Oh, my gosh.
No, listen, we're going to come back for a break. Don't tell anybody about our racist mayor, because I don't know if James heard yesterday. Our new favorite racist mayor, East Haven Mayor Joe Maturo, was, of course, got some heat yesterday over some comments he made about the Latino community. Story, there has been a development. The Latin community has struck back, and the way that they have is hilarious. I love it.
Did they Did they bomb him? Did they bomb him? Well, okay, I won't say anything because if James didn't hear about it, I won't ruin
it. No, don't play it about it. Of course, we'll play the audio again that got him into so much fire when we return to Cerise on the Radio.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
What's up, guys? We're back, Reese on the Radio, right here at blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. The number is 347-308-8701. Or you can check us out at ReeseOnTheRadio.com or send an email to ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. Yesterday, I was having a huge ball with a story that, let me just say, this is my, there, no audio in the year 2012 going to beat this audio. And as we always do, usually on Wednesday, we like to keep it like Racism Wednesday. It's, you know, racism always on Reese on the Radio. And, you know, when somebody does something racist, I have to not only expose it, but I have to enjoy it. And you don't understand the enjoyment that I have. We've only got about 19 minutes. I want to get to it, and I know James has never got a chance to hear it. So allow me to set it up. Okay, so there was a story in East Haven, Connecticut, where four officers, including a sergeant, was arrested by the FBI for discrimination against the Latinos in the East Haven community. There was a lot of, police harassment happening in that community. And we had a long discussion about that. And so WPIX in New York, Channel 11, went up to East Haven, Connecticut, to go have a discussion with the mayor, Mayor Joe Matoro, who is a Republican. And again, I don't care who you are. When you're a racist, you know, if you say something racist, it has to be mocked right here. So the four officers, who appear to be Italian, sounding like in their names, they appear to be Italian, they sounded, but they say they used unreasonable force and concealed their actions when they were targeting Latinos. In fact, one officer was heard on the walkie-talkie, the two-way radio, saying that he loved harassing motorists, made a reference to them coming here on a raft made of chicken wings, was the term that he used. We don't have that audio, although if someone does, find it for me, please. I want to hear everything you said. So anyway, WPIX went up to East Haven to speak to Mayor Joe Matoro, and wanted to ask him a few questions about it, and I don't think Mayor Matoro was too happy about the press being there.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do.
I'm sorry. It never gets old. I listened to that four times today. It's my new favorite audio clip. So, James, did you hear East Haven say?
Oh, my God. Some of my best friends are Latino.
What's that?
Some of my best friends are Latino.
Yes.
I may go to a Latino's house today and have a siesta. Yeah.
Why in the world would he say that? You know, first thing...
Please tell me he's a Republican.
Yes, he is. He's a Republican. Again, trust me, nothing broke my heart more when I looked him up on Wikipedia. I looked him up on Wikipedia to find out. I said, God, please, I want to find out whether or not he's Republican or Democrat, because you know me, I am always looking for an opportunity to play this.
It's the Democratic Party that's the racist. The party of the Ku Klux Klan. The party of Jim Crow. The party of Bull Connor.
Looking for an opportunity to play that, but I can't now because he's Republican. So as it turns out, Mary, because we discussed this at length yesterday, JC, will you please enlighten us with the news from Mayor Joe Maturno that happened today?
Well, after receiving much heat for the comment, this mayor spent most of his afternoon in press conferences with every media outlet that he could find in the tiny, tiny state of Connecticut. Trying to correct himself, trying to save face. In the community, especially in the community of East Haven, has called for his resignation. And he's refused to, resign. However, Mayor Joseph, according to the Hartford Current, which happens to be the oldest and longest running newspaper in the country, states Mayor John Maturo insists he would not resign on Thursday, even while the immigration reform group Junta delivered hundreds of tacos to his office in response to his comment this week that he might have tacos in support of the Latino community. At last count, there was over 500 tacos delivered.
Wow.
With more on the way.
Or 500 tacos with more on the way. So, it's a safe bet that we do know what he'll be having tonight.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet.
Hell, everybody's going to have tacos in East Haven, because what they were doing was they ended up taking the tacos and taking them to the local area shelters. What's that?
They ended up taking them to the local area shelters?
Yeah, local area shelters and food shelters. But they were coming in, and they brought them in with the sterno pans, the whole deal.
Oh, are you
they
serious?
They better not. Those people better not eat those tacos, because there's going to be some dead people in those shelters tomorrow.
Oh, you don't think that they
they do the job that the officers wanted to do.
I guarantee you somebody did something, whether they're going to have the poops tomorrow and for the next week, or they're going to be throwing up or something.
They say Mexican food keeps in the bathroom.
With revenge. What's that, Jay?
Money's revenge.
You know, I love this guy just because he's so awful. And it was so clear that he didn't know not only what he was saying. I'm sure he knew what he was saying. He thought he was being condescending. But he just, the whole time I was listening to him, I kept saying to myself, my man,
he's winning the argument.
Yes. that's the best way to put it, Dave. He really thought he was winning. And, if he was only scoring points with this statistic bastard right here. He was only scoring points with me. And maybe my sister, which, by the way, my younger sister is in love with this guy. See, when she heard it on the news, and she works as a healthcare worker with elderly people. And she said, everyone in the room, when they heard what he said, everyone's jaw dropped when he said it. My sister was literally doubled over. She's got kind of my same sense of humor. She was doubled over because it's such, I guess in a lot of ways, I can't watch when people go to the Apollo Theater and they can't sing and people boo them. I get embarrassed for people. But when people do stuff like this, this is the car wreck I can't turn my head to. You understand what I'm saying? This is the rubbernecking I can appreciate. Because if this guy is going down on flames, I can't stop pressing rewind. And that's what I love about it. So 500.
It's also sort of like, you know, the emperor has no clothes. I mean, he's just going down in flames, and somewhere I'm sure he has like two angels on his shoulder, and they're both going, you know what? The white angel is going, you think we may want to pull back on this one? And the red devil is going, nah, you're doing fine. Keep going.
Exactly. And he's so caught up there. The fact that he keeps going on and on about other, I may have spaghetti tonight. I'm like, what are you suggesting? I'm like, what?
And when he realizes that there's no way out, he then attacks the media.
Yes, and he can't stop attacking the media. You can take it any way you want. Are you kidding me?
And twist it.
I mean, and you can take it any way and twist it. I'm like, listen to me. You're the contractor here. You're the house builder. You're the guy. You bought the lease. You bought the land. Everything that's being built in this summation is all yours. You're on every contract in this assessment, my friend. How can you? We can't twist this. You just asked, what are you going to do for the Latino community? You could have said anything but tacos. I'll invite a couple over for dinner. I don't know. I'll go reach out to them. Said tacos. Because you just it was in your mindset. And I'll never use the word right when I'm talking about the mindset with you. You weren't in your right mind. You were just angry and ticked off. You were trying to protect your police officer. Obviously.
Oh, he was in the right mind, all right. The extreme right. That's your whole party. Right-minded thinking.
And then his last comment today, and the last comment that I heard on the 5:30 news, 5:36 o'clock news, he said, after apologizing for it, he said, what I should have said was, I'm going to go home and protect that community like I would protect the rest of the communities in East Haven, Connecticut.
Yeah, again, it's too late, my man. You will live in infamy. And in my heart, Joe Materno, you have no idea. You have done something to my life that I will always, always remember, never forget, and always cherish. I just want to let you know, Joe Materno, I love you. I will always love you.
He might as well finish that comment with, and watch Telemundo.
Exactly. I will always love you, Joe Materno, for giving me and the rest of the world this.
Why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might have tacos when I go home. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico. I will probably do the same thing for the Latino community.
You realize that's not really the comment to say right now. You might have tacos tonight.
I might have spaghetti tonight. Being of Italian descent, I could go out and I've had ethnic food. And when you ask me what I was doing for Latinos tonight, I may go out and have a Latino dinner in the Latino community. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can twist it and turn it whichever way the press decides to do.
Let me say one thing.
You know,
Let me say one thing. This is the only ship that I would allow the Italian cruise ship captain to jump off.
But the thing is, you know what really gets me is the moderator is trying to give him an out.
Clearly.
He's like, you know, that might not have been what you wanted to say there. You might want to try to clear that up. And he's like, oh, no.
He's going, no.
He tries to justify.
Yeah, exactly. You're taking the taco comment the wrong way. Tacos is
in. And he gets upset. He gets upset. Like, how dare you correct me?
I didn't see anything crazy.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny? He's the mayor of a town that's about two beach shore towns away from where Barack's going to be moving.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a classic.
They share the same beachfront property.
Has Barack
maybe he'll go over there and have some barbecue.
Yeah, right. Go ahead, Mary.
Has Barack secured his new home? Because it sure ain't going to be the White House next year.
We don't know that, Mary.
Don't count the chickens, darling.
Let me tell you something. Contrary to popular belief, I can almost guarantee you that he is not going to get elected again.
Oh, great.
I'm so glad you answered that.
That's okay. Listen, Mary, explain.
If my sister Oprah has anything to say about it.
Yeah, that's okay. Mary, welcome aboard. I would like to make my own personal endorsement of, you know, who should be the next president of the United States because of how he personally feels about the border.
That's why we can't always believe what we hear from the press. Never criticize without knowing the facts. What are you doing for the Latino community today? I might go home and have tacos. I'm not quite sure yet. I have spent 2 years in Puerto Rico.
Listen to me. Let me tell you something about Joe Materno. He would stop those Mexicans from getting into Arizona. He's your man, Jan Brewer. If he got to resign, you bring him down there. He knows how to insult that Latin community just the right way.
Yeah, he'd have them running back.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's got a pretty decent job protecting the borders against Puerto Rico.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's my whole thing, is that he said tacos and then said, I've been to Puerto Rico. Okay, first of all, that's not a foreign country. And where do you make the assessment or where do you make the comparison to tacos to Puerto Rico? Like, it's
you
not
know,
even
you know what's funny? What's funny is that he had a hard time with the reporter correcting him, and a lot of the people that they spoke to, in the Latino community, in the Latin community, I should say, down there, and they spoke to people from Ecuador,
right.
Mexico, from all over, and they spent most of their day correcting them, they don't generally eat tacos in Puerto Rico.
That's the thing. Didn't I say that yesterday? I said the one thing that these people, they were not going to be arguing the fact that he said, I'm going to go home and eat tacos. You know, I know one thing about Latin people. Don't confuse one with the other. If you call a Guatemalan Mexican, he will get offended. You call a Puerto Rican a Dominican, they will get offended. Dominican or Puerto Rican, they will get offended.
A Jamaican, a Barbadian.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an island thing.
Jamaican, a Haitian. You call a Haitian a Jamaican. They will.
Oh, brother.
Now we're talking voodoo.
They will never, ever. All right. Hold on one second, guys. Wait. Mary, you want to apologize about that?
Do I want to apologize about what? Do I want to apologize?
I don't want to apologize about that. I may go home and practice that a little tonight.
My bad. Oh, hey, watch out, because sometimes
I'm fond of the dolls.
You say watch the voodoo. You say you don't want to.
Probably got a powder of blowfish skin powder in her purse now.
I got two lemons
under the bed ready to be twisted together.
What type of weirdness is that?
Okay,
obviously you know nothing about his craziness.
Santeria? Is that Santeria or Brujeria?
Brujeria.
It's not Brujeria, it's Brujeria.
Brujeria, whatever. We call it Brujeria out here. Well, they don't speak very good Spanish in the Puerto Rican communities where I come from. Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Reese, are you sure you don't want to apologize for that comment right there? No. Anyway, I'm back. Everybody knows about President Obama's speech last night, State of the Union speech. This is going to be a very, very heated argument on a Therapy Thursday, which, by the way, I haven't even mentioned, but we will be back with Therapy Thursday today. President Obama announced today that he was going to be doing something very, very, very interesting in the military. And it's not a good thing, in my view. we'll see what our panel thinks when we get back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Repeat that? Repeat it.
Is there anything that Obama does that's ever a good thing in your view?
Well, I'm sorry. Well, what it is that Barack Obama announced today that he is doing could be very, very detrimental to the sanctity of our national security. Okay? Let's just say that our national security may indeed be in jeopardy by what he announced today. When we come back, we'll talk about it. It's Reese on the Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Hey, I'm a little man. It's for the snow. And everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
That wasn't helpful. Hey, we're back at Three Sound Radio, 347-308-8701, right here live on Three Sound Radio at blog. Well, it's blogtalkradio.com/Three Sound Radio. Excuse me. By the way, I want to thank the kind folks and all the bloggers who are out there and checking out our blog, www.reeseontheradio.com. Just to give you guys a heads up, I'm looking now at the, I think in the past 2 hours, wow, that was incredible. We got 183 hits on the website. These guys are still in the chat room talking it up. and I'm trying to figure out why it is that they're not here yet. I don't even think they can hear me. Well, anyway, in the news at the top of the hour, it was announced that President Obama, I got to pull these guys in. I apologize to each of you. I'm trying to get them to listen to the top story. But anyway, it was reported in the news today. Leon Panetta, head of the Department of Defense, said, Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, said that they were going to be scaling down the United States troops to the sum of 80,000 military personnel. Now, that number is astounding, considering during the State of the Union address, President Obama, at the end of it, gave such high praise to our military, of course, for the killing of Osama bin Laden, of course, the rescue that just happened recently of the American woman and the Dutch man by our Navy SEALs, and was talking about teamwork. We need to have teamwork in America, just like our military. And then 2 days later, he fires 80,000 military workers, soldiers as well. That means 80,000 personnel. That is a significant decrease in our military. Now, all things considered, that we have threats of violence against us, the fact that we have threats against our allies in Israel, considering that we still have a very, very, I want to say, tension-filled relationship with Iran and their possible proliferation of a nuclear weapon, and the fact that they are trying now to acquire nuclear energy, the fact that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has made several threats to our ally in Israel, threatening to wipe them off the face of the earth, that's scaling down our military when I believe that there is still a war on terror. In fact, I believe there are plenty of people in our military who would agree that there is still an act of war against the United States of America from our enemies. I believe that some of those enemies are not only foreign, but they are domestic as well. And 80,000 military officers could be a very, very unwise move by the President of the United States, who I personally believe despises our military anyway, believes that we shouldn't be policing the world. I hate that distinction anyway, but we do not police the world. We fight the good fight. We defend where it is needed. We defend the weak, the strongest nation. We defend the weak, the meek, the scared, the impoverished. We go there. We give them military aid. We shoot them because they can't. We go defend them because they can't defend themselves. And the president is trying to scale that down. Was it a political move? I have my doubts. I believe that it was a move that he intended to do all along as president of the United States, because I believe that he despises our military. That's just me. Anybody agree or disagree with me that this is a bad thing for us not to have 80,000 more troops or to have them fired on any particular aspect?
Not considering what he's already managed to bring home. I think that brings our presence across seas down to damn near bare bones minimum. I think that makes us vulnerable there. Not so much here, but there.
Well, if you remember that, what was that report, that conversation that, what was that woman, O'Donnell or whatever it was, who had with Herman Cain, and she said we have 1.5 million military troops in the country?
Right.
Serving in the military? That includes
right.
the National Guard? So 80,000 is a considerable number.
Yeah.
I mean, all things considered. And the reason why I say this is think of the grand scheme of the entire Chinese army. Is one-third the United States population. And there are 310 million people in the country. So that means there are 100,000 people, 100,000 military officers in China, 100 million. We've only got 1.5? And you think that it's time to start shrinking it down 80,000 troops? And what's going to happen to those veterans? Where are they going to go? What are they going to do? They won't be eligible for benefits because, in essence, they're being fired.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. I don't know enough about it.
I don't know enough about it to make it a distinction right now.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, I mean, it sounds good in black and white. Sounds good in black and white, and it may make sense. But I don't know, something just sounds like it might be missing here.
What do you think is missing? You believe that?
That's just it. I don't know, and I don't know enough about it to
Okay. All right.
From what I've heard in black and white, as though I've just read it, listening to you say it. Across seas, yeah, I can see where we're lightening our load there, considering what we brought back from Iraq already.
Yeah, but we should have took back
national,
more.
Well, then again, national security does start over there.
Yeah, national security, of course, starts over there. It has nothing to do with our borders here. And our national security, and we have American interest in a lot of those countries.
Leaving
Iraq is only going, I mean, look at what's going on in Egypt. Right now, Americans are not allowed to leave Egypt. Egyptians will not let Americans leave. That's a serious situation there. There could be a hostage situation there. Once we start telling the people who are our sworn enemies, and we're talking about, you know, not just Al-Qaeda, but there is a Muslim nation out there, there's a Muslim faction out there that wants us dead. Once we start telling them that we're scaling down our military, we are sending a message to those people that we are weaker, that we are militarily weaker. We're
letting down our guard.
Yeah. When we start, you know, reducing our, you know, our nuclear missiles with Russia, oh, you know, we're going to release the our launch codes to Russia. We're not going to use these missiles anymore. I mean, the fact that I found out late last year, I found out that Russia wanted the strategic spots where Europe has their nuclear missiles. Europe refused to give them over, and President Obama secretly gave them to Medvedev. Yes. Behind England's back.
I would have seen it. I'd have to see some.
Look, James, again, this is the reason why, again, I tell you all the time, mainstream media does not scrutinize this president for anything he does. They overlook everything he does. And the reason why is because they're in a tank for him. This is the one they wanted. He was the one we were waiting for.
The chosen.
He was the chosen one. Remember in his speech where he says, we're going to lower the sea level. Come on, JC. You got to find that audio. We are the ones we were waiting for. We're going to raise the mountains and lower the sea levels. Come on. Lower this. Open up the skies. You going to walk on water too, homeboy? Come on. The reason why no one hears about this stuff is because they will never, ever fairly report on the things that he's done, even when they disagree with him. They'll find a way to turn it into a good thing for us. Oh, he's scaling down the military? Yes, because there are many Americans who believe that we're just too much of a military country. There's a military complex in this country. We believe we should police the world. And you know who the people are who are saying it? Young idiots in college. Ron Paul supporters. Idiots. Why do we have to have war? Come on, anybody here believes that we shouldn't have war?
Unless it's necessary.
Anybody
Unless
believe?
It's necessary.
Okay. So when is it necessary? Should we only have war
when
it's
necessary? When is it necessary? That's the issue.
Yeah, I'll tell you when it's necessary. I'll tell you exactly when it's necessary. When you have a people, look, I'll put it to you. This is the best. If you know that there is a group of people who are out there who are being slaughtered by the millions, and you know that their government is treating them in a way that is absolutely genocidal.
I agree with that.
You must do whatever it is you can to protect those people and to protect their lives because they have a right to life. It's not so much about bringing them democracy because, by the way, democracy is something different. If you want to bring them...
Who's making this distinction, though? Who's making the choice on which one we go? Because
how about Darfur? Should we be sending American troops to Darfur?
Have we?
Yes, sure we have. But you know why it's been stopped, right? Because the UN won't let us. Because you know what everybody says? Is that the UN should sanction whether or not we go to war with the country. And the truth of the matter is that the UN isn't in any power or any...
Where's
isn't
Darfur?
In any, what's that?
Where's Darfur?
Darfur's in Africa.
It's in where?
In Africa.
Okay. All right.
Okay. You watch too much news.
They're too many black people are being killed by their own black people. How about Somalia, where the Navy SEALs had to get those the American woman and the Dutch man just Tuesday, right before the presidential State of the Union address. The thing that's going on with Somalia in the Horn of Africa, they're taking cruise ships and tankers. They're taking hostage with AK-47s and holding ransom. Pirates in the Somalian area. Those poor people with nothing because their government takes all their money and the people are left in poverty and the only thing they can do is steal ships to hold people hostage and kill people. I mean, this is ridiculous what it is that's going over there. Are you telling us that we shouldn't? Sure, we can't spread ourselves out to every nation. It's impossible for us to do that with a military that's only 1.5 million people. But guess what? China isn't taking. China's got 100 million people in their military. Have you heard China out there freeing other countries? Never. When is Russia going
that's
out?
Right.
But
well,
wait
right.
a minute. They have the manpower. Why don't they sell them? You want to know why they send 100? They have 100 million military officers to control 1.3 billion people. Because their military is there to kill the people who are in their country. Their military is against their countrymen. It's there to subdue them. The country is there. Their military is not there. And to protect themselves, of course. But to right what's on their country. Remember Tiananmen Square? That was the people versus the government. Russia, when does Russia ever send a military? Because they want to overthrow other companies like Georgia, like Kosovo. Anything? They want to overtake Afghanistan for 20 years to try to take over Afghanistan. 20 years to occupy that land. But no
we
one.
Got some nosy asses, though.
But no.
Think about it.
Look, no one's ever criticized Russia for that. When we sent arms to Afghanistan, you know, the reason why everybody claims we trained Osama bin Laden? Osama bin Laden was a part of the Mujahideen. He was 19 years old. He was a part of the Mujahideen who fought against Russia, and we supplied them with their military weaponry. We gave them their trucks and their bullets. We gave them everything. So they fight against Russia. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. I mean, you can't sit around here and tell me that all of these other militaries, you ever notice, you're saying, why do we have to be the police? Because no one else is doing it. Who would have stopped Saddam Hussein from destroying Kuwait if we didn't go there in Desert Storm? Who would have done it? Iran said nothing. Syria, Egypt, they did nothing. When Saddam Hussein...
Neither did Iranians. Yeah. And then when we got there, the Iranians didn't even want us there in the first place.
But that's right. Where do we have to go through? We have to go through Kuwait. But hold on. Is Kuwait a Muslim country? Yes, it is. Did we... Iraq, a Muslim country? Yes, we did. Is Afghanistan a Muslim country? Yes, we did. You know, here are all these countries that we go out there and we protect when they're in trouble. All of these Muslim countries. But yet, at the same time, who are our biggest enemies? The Muslims. And who are they saying that we're all killing? This guy, Saddam Hussein, killed 300,000 people in a sitting. In a sitting with chemical warfare. But yet, they still believed we had no right going in there and taking...
Mustard gas, no. I always believed that he had to be dealt with for that purpose only.
300,000 people. You want to talk about how bad it was, James? It wasn't like he killed 300,000 people in a year. Saddam Hussein is in the Guinness Book of World Records because he killed them in one sitting. It's the most mass murder in history. You don't think that we should have stepped up for that? What are we? Who are we then as Americans? Who are we? And most people only view... that going in there and helping these countries as we being self-righteous. No, we have the military power to protect these people. It's our duty to do that. If we just stand up there, we defend the people's freedoms. If what it is that we do as Americans, if we want people to live free, We should want that for everybody. We're the greatest nation in the world because we protect those freedoms, the individual freedoms of every man, woman, and child. Why wouldn't anybody
want that? But, Reese, in the process of going and protecting all of these people, what are we doing to our own country?
No, because we are – no, that's the problem. The problem is that we are teaching our young people today to fight a war. The only thing they're hearing is people are going to die. Well, that's the price of freedom. Even Malcolm X, man, who everyone loves to tout about, says there can be no revolution without bloodshed. You know, every revolution is marked in blood. Every revolution
right.
is...
Right. Now, I'm glad you used that word revolution, because, again, especially like in places in like Iran and with Saddam Hussein, okay, this stuff was going on for years, and his own people actually let it happen. All right? No one rose up. No one did anything. All right? In their own country.
What?
We, all right, they weren't doing anything. So we decided, okay, well, you know what? You're not going to do it. We're going to do it for you.
Well, I don't think that was possible. I mean, a lot of those countries asked for help, James. Kuwait asked for help. They were going to be annihilated. They were going to be annihilated by Saddam Hussein, and they knew it. And that's a genocide. We can't sit idly by and let that happen, James. You wouldn't. You wouldn't sit idly by and let it happen. You know, if we, you know, I hate to use an analogy like Jerry Sandusky, but if you were Mike McQuarrie and you walked in a room while Jerry Sandusky is allegedly raping that 10-year-old boy, you would spring into action, my friend. And
oh,
what would
oh, of course.
Okay, so what
all
is
I'm
happening?
Saying is that it still has to be tempered with, now, also, it has
is
to
it
be tempered with what I want to do and what I can do.
Okay, but are you saying that what would you do if you saw a woman being mugged down the street? But you do something, right? You call the police. You call somebody to intervene, right?
Sure.
If you couldn't.
Right.
Okay. So again.
Right, because I've had the converse go against me as well. I have jumped in, like two people were having an argument, a man and wife, I guess boyfriend and girlfriend, whatever, what have you. This guy is sitting there berating this woman and going so far as to strike her. I jumped in, all right, going against this dude because I figured I was defending the rights of this woman who I didn't even know. She jumped on me.
Well, okay, I understand that happens. Again, just because you have, some bad situation that happens when you try to protect someone and a person ended up, but again, it doesn't mean that you don't do it again. The point is that it's in our nature when
True.
We see something happening to somebody that, what we've become is a society that's become passive. We look the other way because we don't want to get involved. And we're saying that it's none of our business. But the truth of the matter is that it's our business. Why is it that we all want to be a global society, but we want to have nothing to do with the globe? Nothing to do with it. You can't possibly think that the only
way... No one is saying that they're going to have nothing to do with the globe.
Well,
it's just that we can't be everywhere and we can't be everything for everyone.
Well, and again, James, nor am I saying that. We must temper it with the right call at the right time with the right thing. And I agree with you there. We can't be everywhere at once. You're absolutely right. We can't spread ourselves too thin. We need to be where we need to be and what's important and what's relevant. I agree with that. But when we are dealing with a situation where people are dying and people are being killed, when you know that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are killing thousands and hundreds of thousands of their own people, you know those people want help. You know they need help. Someone must intervene. Someone has to intervene. And, you may be criticized for stepping in and losing lives that you do, but it's the right thing to do. People are angry about going into Vietnam, but the South Vietnamese is better for it today because we stepped in. South Korea is better for it because we stepped in. There are reasons why we stepped into those wars, because it made the place better. Iraq, although it's still mixed with, it's rife with fighting and bombings and stuff like that, but guess what? Those people for the first time ever got to vote in their own government. Those people had a sense of independence. and freedom they had never experienced before. Who doesn't want that for another country?
And that's all well and lofty. Lofty goals, and all well and good.
A better part of that is, James, what do most of those people do when they graduate from those countries anyway? They all do the same thing. They come here because they know they'll live free here. So if you know that you're getting an influx of so many people, James, let's look at Queens, New York. In the 1980s, we had the largest influx of Indian people ever in Queens, New York. And you know, even your mother's old house was purchased by Indians. Our friend Derek's old house was purchased by Indians. Every person we know, their house, who moved away, all of their houses were purchased by Indians. And why? Why are they leaving their countries? Because they cannot be free there, and they know how free that they can be in this country. So why not, if they're really, really thirsting for that freedom, and it's evident that comes into this country, why not give them those same freedoms? Why not help them build their own freedom, their own democracy, their own republic? Because it's evident
those same people who come here want to treat here as if they're still in the old country. They want to bring in their old, the same regimes that created the problem in the first place. They want to do that stuff, the same kind of things here. And then what they'll say is, if we tell them, okay, well, look, you know, you're in America now. You can't cover up your women three-fourths and fourths and bind their feet and things of that nature.
Who says that? You can do that. You can still do – you can practice your religion in your country, but if the woman decides to go to police because she's threatened to be honor killed, or, you know, she feels as though she's being domineered by her husband, now she can break free of that. She couldn't do that in her country. Take Muslim law, for instance. If a woman is raped in one of these Muslim countries where there's Sharia law, she's got to have 5 witnesses in order for it to be credible. If the woman is walking down the street with another man, or she has an affair, they bury her to her waist. It binds her hands to her side, and they throw stones at her for having an affair.
Okay, can I jump in here? So I find this very interesting that we are having this conversation, or that you and James are engaging in this conversation, going back and forth about how, you know, if America, well, how you're saying, Reese, how, you know, America has to stand up. No other country is going to stand up, but yet, you know, a half an hour ago, we were talking about how, you know, all these illegal people are coming into the country and this and that. So it's like, okay, so we know that these horrific things are going on in Iraq and in Iran and all these Middle Eastern countries. There are horrific things going on in Mexico. There are horrific things going on in Cuba. There are horrific things going on in Africa. But I don't even know how to get my point across because I'm at a, you know, a tongue-tied.
You're just saying that there's so many things that are going on in the world. We can't be there for each and every one of them, as James just eloquently put it. I agree with that. I completely agree with that. But the bottom line is that destroying our military or bringing down our military is definitely not putting us in a position where we can even help the people who need help. Scaling down our military is a weakness
The fact of the matter is we have to scale down our military because we've stretched ourselves so thin helping other people that it's now a viable option.
Yeah.
It's something you have to seriously look at because we're in trouble. And where does most of our money go?
Most of our money goes to entitlement spending, not to the military. But we'll talk about that another time. Okay, we've already bored the hell out of everybody.
Still a huge chunk.
It's not that large. We've bored the hell out of everybody else on here, James, because we're heated discussion. I'm sorry, guys. We'll move on. Okay, we're coming up.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe. But I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
they're calling again. Scrambled egg all over my face. What is a boy to do? Good night, everybody.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits. He rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits. Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't
how
think,
you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays at 7 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Simple question. Which candidate gives us the best chance of defeating Barack Obama? The answer? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is a full-spectrum conservative. Rock solid on value issues like life, marriage, and the right to own a gun, Santorum is also a favorite of the Tea Party for his efforts fighting corruption and taxpayer abuse in Washington. And Rick Santorum led the fight to overhaul welfare, ending abuse and helping millions go from welfare to work. But that's just the start. Rick Santorum has more foreign policy credentials than any of the candidates. And Rick Santorum's Made in the USA jobs plan will make America an economic superpower again. Rick Santorum, a trusted conservative who not only shares our values, but also gives us the best chance to take back America. Finally, a candidate we can all unite behind. Paid for by Rick Santorum for president.
This is Rick Santorum, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton. And Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star.
Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
All right, we're back, folks. It's Reese on the radio. And as you definitely know, as always, it is Therapy Thursday here on Reese on the Radio. Now, I had several things that I could have talked about. And, you know, people know that I often say, you know, when I go through something every week. So, me learning how to deal with it is tough. Because I can't always do it on my own. I guess the best way to put it is this. Let me just let the song end. Okay, well, let me start it here. So, last week, we got a report that said that this guy who did this survey in Connecticut turned out to be a fraud, and that in no way helps your heart. And the catalyst, the thing that made me drink red wine was this survey, and I love red wine. James will attest. He's seen me. We go to bars. I've bought bottles of red wine. When we used to go to the arcade on 42nd Street, we had bottles of red wine. I'd buy bottles of Merlot. We all sit there. We'd be at this huge arcade. They sold bottles of wine. And, you know, that's pretty much, you know, what we did. You know, I got the guys drinking red wine, you know, for a little while. Because that's all I would buy because I loved it. And James will tell you other things. I like looking dainty. You know, even JC has seen me, you know, with my wife. It's my thing, okay? It's just my thing. So then to find out that, you know, I thought I was ahead of the curve when I found out, oh, red wine, great for your heart, coronary, you know, vascular, blah, 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 blah. Whatever. Okay, I was there. And then unfortunately I find out that, you know, the guy is now charged with 145 counts of fraud in his research. No truth to it whatsoever. So then something else happened to me. And right about the time when I got divorced, it was around 1994, maybe 19. I was having a rough time. You know, the ex left me, took my 2-year-old son. She was gone. I was doing a lot of heavy drinking. And I was doing Newport 100s at the time. And, you know, let's just say the heavy drinking was in the arena of moonshine. About a gallon a day. And, you know, one day I'm in a basement apartment that I'm staying in, and I suffer a mild heart attack and collapse to the ground. It was like 1996. I was 27 years old. Hit the ground. Hit the ground like a hot rock through cold water. And, they told me I had a mild heart attack, and I had to curb my diet. Many years later, and I was always skinny, but I always maintained sort of a skinny weight. And as my metabolism slowed down, I started to gain more weight. So at around 1998, maybe 99, I swore off of fried food. And I stopped eating particularly fried. Truth be told, I haven't had fried chicken since 1998. Unless, you know, you count, well, hot wings are kind of different. But I don't eat fried chicken, you know, the conventional stuff. I don't. Because when I did eat fried chicken, especially from those places like Kennedy Fried Chicken, those places, in case you don't know where they are, these are like the bootleg Kentucky Fried Chickens, Kennedy Fried Chickens. When I would eat them, I would literally clutch my heart. Like I felt like I was literally, like my arteries were clogging up. And I'd get very, very winded. So I had to stop eating fried food. I just couldn't do it anymore. And then another damn study comes out. It turns out that there's no truth to the fried food myth that it's bad for your heart. And I got to be honest with you folks. I'm really, really hankering for some fried chicken. I've always missed it. I was walking down the avenue the other day, and I could smell one of those Kennedy Fried Chicken places, and the place, the smell was just overwhelming me, and I hadn't had lunch, and it just had this scent, but it was this ghetto scent. It was like there was something negrorific about it. It was niggerific about that smell. Every time I smelled it, I was that day, and I wanted to pull my pants down a little bit and walk with a limp. Come on, and be like, yo, my man, let me get a two-piece, son. Word up, son. I'll throw the biscuits up in there, son. I was feeling that. But then I realized who I was, and I was wondering, like, what was happening? Like, was it my environment? Had I been ghettoized? What's happening to me? Why am I hankering for ghetto fried chicken? Is it because of the report? Has the report set me free? Is the report so damaging to the myth that it does nothing to my heart that now that there is a black side of me dying to come out? I don't know. What's happening? Let's go.
Do only black people eat fried chicken? I love fried chicken.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about me here. Again,
I'm teasing you.
Well, I think what happened here, when you tripped over your mom's slipper, hit your head on the coffee table when you were six, and the last thing you saw before your head hit the corner of that that coffee table was Brian Gumbel, you woke up and thought you were.
So do you think that there's something happening? Like, was there some sort of...
Wait a minute. This report had an opposite, had kind of an opposite effect on you, because the previous report about the wine, you were like, oh, what am I going to drink now? I'm not going to drink red wine anymore because it's not good for my heart.
It doesn't do anything.
Now you're saying, what?
It doesn't do anything for me. I mean, there are no...
And I dispute that, but go ahead.
But no, I'm saying
is this. But the fried chicken does. It satisfies your taste buds now. Now you can go have fried chicken and not have to worry about having a heart attack.
No, it's a different smell that attacks a different part of the brain, and it does something to you that makes, I can't describe it.
That makes your belly go, ugh.
Make your belly, your mind, your toes start to twitch back and forth. And
I wouldn't go that crazy.
I think.
But Kennedy Fried Chicken? Are you kidding me?
Listen to me.
Kennedy Fried Chicken? Popeyes is better than Kennedy Fried Chicken.
Kennedy?
What I believe it was, because the report came out the same day that I was walking down the street, and I saw it, and it was almost like something had been triggered in my brain by the report. When the report said fried chicken is no longer, the report says that the fried chicken clogging your arteries or bad for your heart was a myth. I think it triggered something in my brain that when I smelled the fried chicken, there was something of a placebo effect, maybe?
No, that was that 6-year-old Negro looking for a way out.
Oh, my God. First of all, let's clarify for everyone that it's not that fried foods are bad for your health. It depends on what type of oil you are using. So you cannot use certain oils because it is still bad for your health to clog your arteries. There are
right.
two oils that they mentioned in the story, and I want to say one of those was peanut oil, and the other one was, I want to say, olive oil.
Okay. What do you mean, the good oils?
Yeah, the good oils. You could, you know, I guess you could indulge in those.
No, I think it was peanut, and I think it was cottonseed oil.
Yeah, it was cottonseed oil. You're right.
Cottonseed oil.
Yes.
Okay, that's. I don't know where I'm going to find
that.
That
ain't got black written all over it. I don't know what that.
Oh, I got to mark that one down.
Cottonseed oil and fried chicken. Now, that just goes together.
Absolutely.
Well, and realistically... And realistically, no one, not there's not going to be a lot of places that you'll find that's going to be frying chicken in any one of those oils because both of them are fairly expensive.
No. They now have to. It's the law.
Wait. Here's my question. I don't want to get off on a tear about
no,
that.
No. Trans fat
think,
oil or something is
right.
the law.
What do you think triggered me to this kind of wanting fried chicken? What do you think happened?
It was your inner Jeffrey St. Clair. All right? Your inner Jeffrey St. Clair
that's
finally realizing cool. it says, oh, cholesterol, never had it, never will.
Yeah. But wait, so. Now all of a sudden I'm, like, I was literally in the mood. It was so, it smelled, any other time I've smelled that stuff, I was completely turned off. I could walk right by it. But this time I saw the line. The only thing that deterred me was the line was so long. And then I started thinking about other fried chicken places that I hadn't been.
Other people heard the story, too. There was a run on chicken.
This. I'm curious, what day was this?
In the news today.
It was
chicken
whatever.
Tripled.
Whatever the day was that I went out on the job interview, because I it was the same date that I had my last, you know, my last thing that happened at the retail store.
Okay,
that was
funny
2 weeks
thing,
ago.
It's funny thing
that
you say that because
Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, the funny thing you say that, and I don't mean to stray off the subject, but Dr. Oz recently did a show, and they were talking about ever since the whole Paula Deen incident.
Right.
They had been bringing in the chefs to cook healthy.
Right.
And as it turns out, with chicken, for years people thought that breast, being the leanest part of the chicken,
right,
was the part of the chicken that was healthiest for you.
I do remember
and it
that.
Turns out that is wrong.
What is the most healthiest part? Please say
the thigh.
Uh-huh.
It's the thigh. Because
yes.
Because the thigh has enzymes that fight cholesterol. If I'm not mistaken, and I know I am mistaken on this one, but you can look it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I couldn't remember if it was 52% or 82%.
Okay, that's a
that
that's
high.
A wild. Yeah, that's
okay.
A
but the bottom line is the breast tastes better.
Yeah,
no.
This is true.
No, it
I
doesn't.
Think the, I think the breast tastes better.
No, not at all.
No, it doesn't. Dark meat all the way.
It's
now,
fine.
Now,
unless
white,
you're making a burger
meat,
or a sandwich,
white,
no.
No offense.
White
Jeff.
Meat. Jeff, white Jeff. Meat is the best in chicken. Dark meat is the best in men.
Well,
we
to me, I don't know about all that.
No, pork. The other white meat tastes better.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to dispute that. No, I'm just saying I found it very very odd because the way that it affected me. In such a way, was like I felt this ghetto-ness come over me. Like I can walk up to the, and I'm in a two-piece suit, dressed like I was. You know, that was the same day I got turned away at the store looking for a job because I was dressed too nice. I mean, God forbid if somebody would have turned me away at the chicken place and said,
"How far were you from Ace Avenue?"
No, I was in Queens. So I mean,
oh,
I was like, maybe they would have turned me away because I was wearing a suit. I was like, hey, yo, let me get a two-piece. They're like, sir, are you sure you want to eat here?
maybe that was the – maybe the guy saying that to you with your two-piece on had – maybe it was like a double effect. You hearing the story plus this guy turned you down because you were dressed too nice. So maybe the combination of let me sag my jeans and talk about, yo, let me get a two-piece.
I swear to you, it happened, actually, I was going to eat before I went to the retail place. It was lunchtime, I was going to eat before I actually went to the retail place. So I was lucky that didn't happen that way. But I'll be honest with you, it struck me out of nowhere. Bell hit me, it made me turn around and look down the block because I couldn't see where the chicken place was. I hadn't known, it was, you know where it was? It's the block of the Coliseum, okay? On Jamaica Avenue. And Mary,
yeah.
James will remember that. But there's a chicken place inside the Coliseum, you know, the little, you know, that one block where there's no cars. It's sort of like an outdoor mall.
Yes, it's right there by the bus depot.
Exactly. The bus station's at the further end. I was at Jamaica Avenue.
Best chicken in the area.
I didn't know that. But when I walked past there and that scent took me over, I caught
myself. What chicken was that?
He said the best chicken ever. I don't know what the name of it is. It's like some.
Not ever. I said in the area.
But. Oh, in the area. I'm looking over. I'm literally stretching my neck to the right, looking down the block, trying to identify where the place is. It was so odd. Even I was saying to myself, like, you don't do that for chicken. Like, when have you ever done that? Like, what is that about? And I'm going, but damn, like, in my mind, I'm just going, wow, this smells really good. And it's really, and I know the smell. It's ghetto chicken.
Because the brainwashing.
You should have stopped,
because
I bet you that place is fairly new.
I don't know. I have no clue why. I mean, I think it was really, really something that triggered off that just said that, you know, I didn't have to pretend anymore. Come back, Reese.
It is the
come thing. Back.
Well,
back.
And look at where you were at though.
Come back,
I mean, you were on it was all this combined. You were on Jamaica Avenue,
yeah,
by the Coliseum. You've been turned down because you had on a 2-piece suit. You looked too good. You saw this.
That's right. The man keeping
court.
You down.
Yes, the man was
the
keeping
man
me down.
The man was keeping you down, and you needed to get back into exactly where you were.
Come back.
And there it is. You had a black moment.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. I had a black moment. That's what it was. That's what it is. I think that's what it was. I was having a black moment. I've had a few. I must admit, over the past couple of weeks, I've had a few black moments. They've not been pretty though, but I've had a few.
Oh, wait. They have not been pretty.
No.
I've had a few white moments, people, so I don't know what is going on.
Well,
and I told Reese this earlier.
You've had quite a few blonde moments as well, but, you know, we're not going to talk about that.
Excuse me, Dreadman. Wow. Okay.
Well, no,
it's
no,
a mocha latte swirl, something or other, macchiato.
I'll let you slide on that on the air, but you can believe your phone will be ringing when we get off the air.
What I found amazing about, when I say I've had a lot of black moments that were kind of like, you know, black moments, and I said they weren't pretty, in essence, what it is that I'm saying was that it was very, very out of character for me to behave in the way that I did, and I found, like, you get around people and you find out you start talking like them. You know, I've seen people move to certain areas and they get their act, start using their vernacular or their syntax. I mean, and I know that that's going to happen when you're around people for a little while. I have tried to continue to maintain my own syntax. It's the way that I am. It's the way that I speak. I tried very, very hard not to change. Very hard not to change. But unfortunately, you get caught up in the moment. And that there were times I got caught up in a moment. I felt as though I needed to behave a certain way so that the person could recognize where I was coming from. And I almost feel it as, I call it a form of phoniness on my part, because I'm not just being who I am. I'm somewhat fitting in. Like, there's a part in my ego that's going, well, look, man, when in Rome, you know, kind of, and that you don't really want people to look at you as an oddball. But then there's another side of me that just goes, you know, of course, you are an oddball. You know, live with
that's
it.
That's an inferior complex. Like, you have to dumb yourself down to deal with other people.
Down. Well, I don't agree with that, because I think that certain people can go into any situation and
blend and mesh.
And blend and mesh. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing when you're doing it in a phony way.
Yeah, but
if
you're doing it. But wait. But if you're doing it to, okay, let's say it like this.
For acceptance? Yeah, you're not that.
No, no.
That.
Well, if I'm doing it, let's say, instead of using the typical black and ghetto scenario, let's use typical, you know, pardon the expression, white trash scenario. Would I end up talking with a hick accent and using a vernacular so that I them? I mean, even if I did, like, what's the reason for doing that if I couldn't be myself? Or are we saying that it's only okay to acclimate when you're behaving in a more civilized manner? So, in other words, you're hanging out with stockbrokers. You probably behave in kind of a more frat boyish way. You're hanging out with people who are captains of industry. And, you know, those guys go in and they're sipping cognac, you know.
I mean, you adjust to your surroundings.
Yeah,
situation dictates.
Say again?
Situation dictates. When I was in the service, and I had a drill sergeant, Mad Max, and he had a personal motto. It was, you know, situation dictates. No matter what the situation is, you let it dictate your actions. Because, and then this way, you're always going to be on top of any situation.
So you're saying when in Rome, essentially you're saying when in Rome. Even if you're in that environment, behave that way.
It's quite natural to take on certain characteristics when you're inundated or surrounded by such.
Yeah, that's what I'm fearful of, though. See, that's what that scenario was about the fried chicken. I thought
well,
that
if you had your app, you wouldn't be in that neighborhood anyways.
You're probably right. No, I'm saying that I feel like there was a part of that taking over me where because I was in this surrounding that I was starting to fit into these certain things. I haven't reached the music platform yet. Right, I'm not listening to hip hop music in any way whatsoever. I don't turn on the local hip hop stations here. I have not bothered at all to listen to those stations, primarily because I've not, I'm just not interested in the music. But I've not followed any of the trends, so to speak. That you know, what I'm saying I've not followed any of those trends. But I find myself in a lot of ways slipping into some of those things I did as a kid. When I was much more ghetto and a lot less.
Reese, when were you ever ghetto?
I was slightly ghetto. I used to have.
Excuse me, but this man can rap.
Hey, that's right. I used to listen and do the hippity hop. James will tell you.
This must have been before I met you because when I met you, you were not from the time that. Since I've known you, I have never seen a ghetto.
No, actually, it was more after. It was more after you met me.
Oh, okay.
But I had dreads, you know.
No, you didn't.
Dry colored.
Yes, I did.
I want to see photos.
I don't think I have any.
Thank God.
Well, I want to see photos of that.
Yeah, I had dreads. Thank God. I wore baggy clothes. I did everything. I was all over the place.
It could have been used for blackmail.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you were a dirty backpacker.
I was a dirty backpacker for a while. James will attest to that. I was a dirty backpacker.
That term really does not sound well. I would not use that term.
No, not a fudge packer. A backpacker. Different thing entirely.
Hey, you said a dirty backpacker.
Yes, exactly. That's JC's scenario. You know, boot camp, click, Black Moon.
I got it.
Black hippies.
Hey, can I say something before we go? I mean, I know we got 2 minutes, and it's way off topic here, but I've been watching the presidential debate.
Yes.
And... you know, I just can't take this Ron Paul very seriously.
No one does.
I mean,
see, I'm coming from a totally different thing here because, you know, he just reminds me too much of Jim Mora. You know, the guy, the coach, because I keep expecting him to go primary. Primary? What are you kidding me? Primary? I can't even win a debate.
Yeah. Playoffs? I'm not talking playoffs.
All right, guys. We got to go. Thanks for checking us out and hanging out with us today. As usual, it's Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio. Check out ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get that information on the Greg Kelly story. And, of course, if there are any developments, you'll hear them right here tomorrow on Reese on the Radio. Thank you, as always, for joining us. For myself, Mary, JC, the producer, and James, the Kool-Aid. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll see you tomorrow.
Robin, call us tomorrow.